So wrong.
Let me ask you.
Hold on, don't interrupt. Okay. Go ahead, Dr. Mitchell, I'm fine.
Well, I eventually went to the Pentagon and asked for a meeting with the Intelligence Committee of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, which I got with another naval officer who had had many similar experiences. And we told our story. And this gentleman, a vice admiral, said to us, well, I don't know about that, but I'm going to find out. And called a few weeks later and said he had found the source of the black budget funding for this project, and that he was going to subsequently investigate, because if it was real, he should know about it. As a matter of fact, he should be in charge. That was his words. And so we did get calls from him sometime later, and a report much later than that, that he had found the people responsible for the cover-up and for the people who were in the know, and were told, I'm sorry, Admiral, you do not have need to know here, and so goodbye.
All right, Bill.
So what are you saying? So did you, first of all, did you interview these people on their deathbed or under oath? Okay, I want the viewer, I mean, I'm not going to your mind. So that's for, going for that. Then, you know, you said.
They sought me out.
You referred to a vice president.
They sought him out.
Okay, but they were not on their deathbed. A deathbed declaration is quite a different thing from seeking you out and telling a story.
Hey,
I'm not going to convince you.
I am not interested in arguing with you. I'm telling my story. If you want to shut up and hear it, I'll be glad to talk. Otherwise, no.
So we're back with Mr. X, and we're sitting down now to go over a very important topic, one that will hopefully be given the attention it deserves in the near future, and that is the Admiral Wilson leaks. So the plan for the talk is to initially provide a brief overview of the Admiral Wilson leaks for those that might not be too familiar with the backstory. And from there, we're going to break down each part of the document from start to finish and expand upon what's already been included in the transcripts. And then we're going to finish this off with a Q&A session. And so without further delay, let's jump right into this with Mr. X. And so what do you want to do first? You want to just jump into kind of like a little backstory involving how these Admiral Wilson leaks came about and why they're so important?
Yes, I think that's a good way to proceed. Basically, this document, which leaked out recently, is a description of Admiral Thomas Wilson's journey to try to figure out who is managing these special access programs. And I'll basically give like a little overview of the story now. It's a very interesting story. Basically, in 1997, Dr. Stephen Greer of the Disclosure Project, back then I think it was called CSETI, he has managed multiple projects for UFO disclosure. So it was Dr. Stephen Greer. Commander, Navy Reserve Commander Willard Miller, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who was an astronaut, and he also, which we'll find out later, he was an advisor to NIDS, which was Bigelow's National Institute for Discovery Science, and a couple other individuals go to the Pentagon for a briefing with Admiral Thomas Wilson. So Dr. Stephen Greer gives this briefing and informs Admiral Wilson that there indeed have been crash recoveries of extraterrestrial spacecraft, and that unacknowledged special access programs have successfully reverse engineered these vehicles. And although it's not mentioned the document in the Admiral Wilson document we're going to review, it's important to mention that Dr. Stephen Greer had already sent Admiral Wilson several briefing documents, including a leaked NRO, National Reconnaissance Office document, with project names a week or so previously to the briefing at the Pentagon. And Dr. Greer claims that when the briefing in the Pentagon took place, Admiral Wilson had already made some calls about these programs. So actually, he was already investigating, which is just a little detail to point out. And basically, Admiral Wilson starts searching for these programs with the assistance of The former Secretary of Defense at that time, William Perry, and former members of the senior review group of the Special Access Program Oversight Committee, not the members that were currently in place at that time, but previous members. And they help him track down these special access programs in the files of OUSTAT, the Office for the Undersecretary of Defense for Technology Acquisition and Logistics. And he tracks them down and he calls several programs, and basically some of the programs refer him to other programs, and he eventually gets a hold of the control group that's managing these different special access programs, these four UFO-related special access programs. I want to stress here, these are most likely not the only UFO-related top secret special access programs in the world. These were just four that fell, that were getting funding from the DOD. And there could have been others that he did not locate that were getting funding from the DOD. There could have been others from that were getting funding from the Department of Energy or other organizations. So he just found four. That doesn't mean that's all there was or that's all there is on. So anyway, he calls them, he talks to them, and he demands access to these programs because he tells them how he is J2, which means that he's the head of the Intelligence Directorate for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And he makes his case, but they say, hey, you need to come talk to us. And so he travels out to their location. We don't know exactly where it was, but we're guessing somewhere far enough away from the Pentagon that it could have been in the southwestern United States. So he travels there. He makes his case again, and they deny him access, but they do admit that they have a craft that was recovered sometime in the past that was not made by human hands, that's not human technology, and he demands access, and they refuse him again. So he goes back to the Pentagon, and he makes a fuss, and he goes to the senior review group at that time and demands access, and they not only refuse him, but they threaten to take away his pension. They threaten to reduce him in rank, and they threaten for him not to get his promotion to director of the DIA. And apparently that's kind of where the story ends, because until he talked to Eric Davis years later and told this story, he kind of dropped the issue just like they wanted him to. I guess he didn't want to make waves. Maybe he felt eventually that it would be better for his career to just do what they said. But eventually he did tell Eric Davis.
And then it might be worth addressing, just before we kind of jump into breaking down the documents, just how they kind of got leaked out and why we're even able to talk about them now, at least just quickly.
Yes. Oh, yes. Absolutely. That's very important. Basically, very short story. When Edgar Mitchell was a advisor, scientific advisor to NIDS, the National Institute for Discovery Science, and Eric Davis worked for NIDS as well at one point in time. And so apparently this series of notes that was composed by Eric Davis during a meeting with Admiral Wilson in 2002, he made this series of notes that we're going to go through in detail. And you could call it a transcript, or you could call it extremely detailed notes. And he transferred this over to Eric Davis, transferred it to somehow either directly to Edgar Mitchell, or it may have went through someone else in NIDS to Edgar Mitchell, but it got in his private archive. And then when Edgar Mitchell passed away, he had a friend who basically rescued this document and other documents, but this appears to be the most important document, the most significant. Maybe we don't know that for an absolute fact, but it appears to be because it's the most significant one that has came out so far out of this collection. He basically rescues all of Edgar Mitchell's files. So a friend of Edgar Mitchell acquires these documents. Time passes, and this individual knew James Rigney, and at some point, James Rigney arranged to acquire the document, and so he obtains it, and he ends up passing it along to Grant Cameron, the UFO researcher, and Grant Cameron finds the document to be too hot to handle. At first, you know, he was supposed to post it or distribute it, but then he kind of becomes fearful about it because he realizes the extreme significance of this document. And at first, he was going to literally censor every name in the entire document and black it out. So it would have been a heavily redacted document. But thankfully, he did distribute it to a few people in confidence while he was trying to decide what to do himself with it. And then it got leaked out, apparently by someone either he distributed it to or if they let someone else see it. And somebody posted it to Reddit. And so there's a trail of how this document got out. We also know that it existed in the mid-2000s because researcher Richard Dolan was shown a portion, a few pages of this document by someone which will remain unnamed. And he was shown this document. And it basically is what we have here. He saw the part that you'll learn about soon, where it talks about not made by human hands, not of this earth, and so on. So that's basically the story. Do you want to get into the meat of the document now?
I think that's probably the best way to carry on with this. And I just want to make it clear what we're going to do is we're going to have the documents up on the screen. So as we're talking through each specific page of these transcripts, you guys will be able to look on the screen if you're watching right now, and you'll be able to read along. And the plan is basically to, I believe, expand on certain names and acronyms. There's quite a few different names and quite a few different acronyms that are throughout these documents that not everybody understands. So the plan, I believe, is to just expand a little bit more on these, right?
Yep, that's the plan. And I would apologize to everybody. I have a tickle in my throat. It's not coronavirus. I just have allergies. It's in the morning time. And so
you sound fine. Don't worry.
Okay, I appreciate that. My throat doesn't feel exactly fine, but I'm okay. This document, it's called, some people call it EWD notes, because at the very top it says EWD notes for Eric W. Davis. Other people call it the Admiral Thomas Wilson document. So it starts off with EWD notes, then a date, 10-16-02. I'm assuming that's when he composed these notes. We don't know if this is a literal transcription, which it doesn't look exactly like a literal transcription, but you know, he may have had a recording. He may have recorded the conversation with Admiral Wilson. We just don't know. I would find it very surprising if he did not record it, because there's so much data in here. I doubt, unless Eric Davis has photographic memory, he could have remembered this much. So I have a feeling he recorded it. He may not have. It's possible that immediately after the meeting, he ran into a restaurant somewhere and wrote down everything he could remember. That's possible. But I tend to think it's a little more possible that he made a recording, but we may never know. So here it goes. It says, Eric Davis meeting with Admiral Wilson. Rich says to go to EG&G Special Projects Building at Greer in Paradise. Meet at 10 a.m. Don't be late. Rich is one of his contacts, I believe, in this Retired Intelligence Officer Association that's mentioned later in the document. And this is in Las Vegas. And to continue with the document, 10:10, Admiral late. So the Admiral was actually late getting there. Arrives with two Navy officers in uniform. He's in suit, now civilian. This is right after he had retired, because Admiral Wilson eventually did become director of the DAA. And so this is right after he retired. Now, to continue, in uniform, one full lieutenant, one commander, A petty officer drives the car. Greetings with Admiral Wilson. We sit in his car in back of EG&G building. And they didn't actually sit in the back of the building. It was in the parking lot. That's mentioned in the document, too. Talk until 11:20 a.m. Others departed for building to attend meeting inside at 10:10. TW for Thomas Wilson. TW, hello. The minute I saw your EWD resume, U.S. Uniformed Services ID copy, Air Force orders and physics paper Rich gave, I knew who you were. Put two and two together. Figured you out. Figured who you were. Laughs. You don't want to talk about my career or DIA history. DIA stands for Defense Intelligence Agency. EWD. No, actually not. TW. I recalled phone call with Oak Shannon in fall. August of 99. Big Oak Shannon fan. Go back years in Navy before Oak left for LANL. Oak Shannon was a former project manager at Los Alamos National Laboratory, and he also attended the Advanced Theoretical Physics Working Group that met in the early 1980s. That included Hal Puthoff and a series of other individuals. So now back to Thomas Wilson, TW. Oak talked 2 hours, wanted to convince to talk to me, EWD, about what he told Will Miller, which stands for Israeli Commander Willard Miller, but to continue, June 97 and April 97. Re Boston Globe story, L. Keen, that means Leslie Keen, yep, UFO topic, crashed, retrieved UFO craft bodies, etc. MJ-12 like UFO organization or cabal. EWD, what was said? Thomas Wilson again. Confirmed Greer, Miller, Mitchell gave talk in Pentagon conference room. That would have been Stephen Greer, Commander Willard Miller, and Edgar Mitchell gave the talk in the Pentagon conference room. Now to continue. Admiral Mike Crawford, General Patrick Hughes were present, others too. Now, this is in the little area of contention here, just one little area, because Dr. Stephen Greer actually said that he briefed Patrick Hughes separately at another time later on. So this was years after the fact. So probably Admiral Wilson just got this one little detail wrong because it was a little slip of his memory. Or it's possible Eric Davis remembered what Admiral Wilson said slightly incorrectly. So that's a little thing right there, but it's not a big thing. To continue, date April 97, Ed Mitchell said 4/9/97. After group broke up, that's talking about the conference in the Pentagon, Miller, which would be Commander Willard Miller, and Admiral Wilson talked privately for 2 hours on UFOs, MJ-12, Roswell, crashed UFOs, alien bodies, etc. Thomas Wilson was intrigued, knew about intelligence on U.S. military intel, UFO close encounters, and foreign government encounters. He had seen the records, and he told Miller. TW, Thomas Wilson. Yes, Miller asked the question on MJ-12 UFO cabal. Crashed UFO. Confirmed he called Miller, CA, late June 97 and told that he, Miller, was right. There is such an organization in existence. EWD, what did you tell? Now, before I go on here, I want to specify that one reason why he might have been able to tell Miller that there was such an organization like MJ-12, or perhaps literally MJ-12, was that he received this document from Dr. Stephen Greer, leaked NRO document. This document is available online on one of Dr. Stephen Greer's website. I believe it's a Sirius Project website. It's up there. And this document has a list of project code names such as Cosmic Ops and Maj Ops, that's M-A-J, and Magi, M-A-J-I Ops, and others that Stephen Greer said helped him track down at first, gave him some leads on the UFO-related special access programs. So M-A-J, M-A-J-I, that could stand for Majestic 12. Also, Admiral Wilson was actually going through files and information about these programs, so it's possible he may have even came across file names or program names or project names relating to MJ-12. You know, and again, I don't want to get too far away from this, but, you know, Bob Lazar, if we believe him, he said that his badge had MAJ on it, M-A-J. So that might be why Admiral Wilson could say that in organization like MJ-12 or potentially MJ-12 itself did indeed exist. Now, to continue, go ahead.
One thing I'd like to potentially expand on, if you're able to, just before we move on to the next slide, is the Leslie Keen Boston Globe article. Are you able to, because some people might not know what the full reference is to that with Willard H. Miller. Do you know, are you able to expand on that at all?
Basically, in that Boston Globe story, she leaks that there was a briefing with him in the Pentagon. She leaks basically that Admiral Wilson was briefed, and later on in this document he'll say how he caught a lot of flack for that. So that's basically what that Boston Globe story was, and there was some other content in it as well I don't have memorized, but it's available online if somebody wants to do a search. So now Eric W. Davis asked Admiral Wilson, what did you tell? And Thomas Wilson says, I found it, where I looked, who I talked to, but did not name everyone. That's it. So that's what he told Miller. And Eric W. Davis says, I show Miller letter to me, Eric W. Davis, dated 4/25/02, please evaluate. And this letter he's talking about, we'll go through in a minute. It's included in this document. It's kind of like inserted within it. It was a letter from Miller to Eric Davis. So TW, Thomas Wilson, then states, didn't tell Miller everything. Miller knows what I did in Pentagon Records Group search, but no more. Miller can make good educated guesses on who contractors has alien hardware. Do not pay Miller. Sounds hard up to pay for nice Florida home and private beach privilege. Laughs. Thomas Wilson. Miller can give good advice on which defense companies to look at. That's all he knows. And then he changes the subject, and in here's additional comments that Thomas Wilson made. Oak told all about J.A. That means John Alexander. He was the guy who ran the Advanced Theoretical Physics Working Group in the 80s. He's written books. You can Google his name, John Alexander, and you can
involved with Skinwalker as well, I think, right?
Yes. Yes, yeah. He is. And he talked about, it says APT, Advanced Theoretical Physics Working Group, meetings at BDM Corporation, this next little sentence I'm adding is just, I'm adding, it's not in here. Those meetings took place at McLean Secure Facility. And then it says references Blum's book, and that book, I have the name of it. Let me find where I wrote that down. When it references Howard Blum's book, that's the book was titled Out There. So again, the Howard Blum's book was titled Out There, and it's about the Advanced Theoretical Physics Working Group meetings. So that's what that book was about. To continue. He says, talked about J.A. Blum's book, Oakey's role, who attended, etc. Oak briefed me on the whole BDM thing. Again, that's the Advanced Theoretical Physics Working Group. Talked about the remote viewing program for 10 minutes. I know something of this RV remote viewing. Oak said,
Do we know what BDM, sorry, just do we know what BDM stands for before we keep going?
It's the name of the corporation. I'm not exactly sure what it stands for off the top of my head. But you can Google it and probably figure out what those names represent. And then, so again, this is Thomas Wilson saying, Oak said IEWD was a team player, would keep mouth shut, no media connections, obey all restrictions, not in government, no clearances, but pedigree excellent, professional, personal references very excellent. So Oak Shannon basically was very important in getting Admiral Wilson to talk to Davis. And what's interesting about this is I know that I want to say Grant Cameron actually contacted Oak Shannon. And I don't think he wanted to say much, but he's still alive. This is someone investigators could contact and ask Oak Shannon about his role in all this. If journalists ever wanted to contact him, he is alive. So that's a potential witness right there. Now, to move on, here's the letter that Willard Miller wrote to Eric Davis. And I will skip the addresses at the top. So I will just read the main part of the letter. Dear Eric, I must apologize to you and Hal for not getting back with you sooner. The fog of war, current business activity, and losing your new email address all contributed to the delay, which I regret. First, I must ask if you and or Hal would be interested in meeting Mr. Bob Beckwith in Tallahassee, Florida, the evening of May 30th. Bob has been invited to meet with the head of the Florida Academy of Sciences and the director of the High Magnetic Field Laboratory for a roundtable discussion of his, Mr. Beckwith's, force model of the universe and his planned experiments in LTT, levitation, teleportation, time travel, among other subjects. I believe that this meeting date is now firm, but that will be determined in a conference call Thursday, 25 April. All that's not that super important, so I'm moving on in this letter. Next, let me respond to a few of your and Hal's previous questions. And he states, I would be willing to assist you and Hal with your ongoing research into UFO crash retrievals and the entities within the government or outside of it that are involved in that business. First, there must be absolutely no mention or association of my name with your work or investigation. I have absolutely nothing to gain from such association at this time and possibly much to lose. Second, I would charge you only for the actual time I spend in putting together materials, references, or contact list for you to pursue. I would expect that time to be minimal since that initial information would not take long to put together, probably less than 8 hours. My standard rate for such work is 180 per straight time hour. Third, nothing I would provide you would be classified from a national security perspective. Although I have held a top secret clearance with access to special compartmented information, SCI, and other special clearances for other programs, I currently do not work in the classified realm, nor do I hold those clearances. As I discussed with you, only by means of working on a current classified government contract and having the need to know and thus requesting my previous clearances be reinstated by DOD would I again work in the classified realm. Now, all that said, in pending further discussion with you and Hal on your ultimate objectives for having such information, I could provide the following particulars on a special team involved as a secondary mission with recovering crashed craft, including but not limited to the previously classified F-117 stealth fighter. This team or its successors, its parent sponsoring entity, and its two key officers may provide some of the information that you seek. Number two, the name and last location of a senior officer who I believe had firsthand knowledge, U.S. government alien reproduction vehicles, ARVs, at Area 51 and associated locations. I want to mention, I'm not sure if this is actually talking about the Fluxliner ARV, which was also called the alien reproduction vehicle, or if this was just another reverse engineered craft. That's unclear here. To move on, the name and current location of a retired senior flag rank officer, that means he's a general flag rank officer, who I believe was directly involved in government interaction with a significant UFO event on the East Coast of the U.S., and I believe has, by virtue of his former leadership position, high military rank and control of significant military forces, direct knowledge of U.S. government involvement in this business. 4, a list of civilian contractors who, by virtue of their past and current highly classified work, current capabilities, clearances, specialized personnel, and geographic areas of concern, most likely have current involvement in and knowledge of U.S. government work in alien-derived technologies, crashes, landing, and associated events. If you have interest in any of the above, please let me know. Finally, I have a request. I'm trying to locate a company in Las Vegas, Nevada, which some years ago manufactured a specialized disabling pepper spray for the military and law enforcement. This company was called One Mark Inc., 2300 West Sahara Avenue, STE 500, and I knew its VP, a Mr. Joe Zuccaro. Any help in locating him and the company would be appreciated. Why he was trying to find this guy, no one knows. Now, that's the letter that is referenced in the conversation between Eric Davis and Admiral Wilson. I will say, to be fair, that Willard Miller, when questioned, denies that he wrote this. And he actually, I believe, if I remember correctly, suggests someone copied and pasted this letter together from other documents he had written. But I doubt that. I believe Stephen Greer tremendously doubts that. I personally believe, I could be wrong, you know, but I think he did indeed write this. I think that if you read in this document where he talks about he would have much to lose if his involvement was revealed. That, you see, I'll read that part again. First, there must be absolutely no mention or association of my name with your work or investigation. I have absolutely nothing to gain from such an association at this time, and possibly much to lose. So I believe it's just obvious that he would deny this, that he wrote this. Again, I can't say that with 100% certainty, but it makes perfect sense. So to move on with the regular document, now we're moving back to the regular notes between notes of the conversation between Admiral Wilson and Eric Davis. So T.W. Thomas Wilson told Oak it's a bad time, no good to talk to me, Eric W. Davis, too busy, said Oak, too difficult to contact anymore, heard he was in and out the hospital, extremely sensitive to stress, heart sick, bad news, tried calling Linda, takes messages, but none returned. She doesn't want much on Oak's plate for fear. Linda, I'm just interjecting this here. Linda is Oak Shannon's wife. So, didn't say yes or no to request. I would think on it. 3 years pass in retiring. Left DIA 2002, replaced by Admiral Jacoby. Admiral Jacoby, his full name is Admiral Lowell Edwin Jacoby, U.S. Navy. He was born August 28, 1945, was the 14th director of the Defense Intelligence Agency. T.W., came to test site area to wrap up projects he began in 98. Successor can't be bothered with right now for lack of time and knowledge. Did tour audit, say goodbye to folks. Trip set up by NNSA, National Nuclear Security Agency. Rich and Doug, UEWD, know them. AFIO, that stands for the Association of Former Intelligence Officers, told about how new Las Vegas chapter needed guest speakers for chapter public venue, raise money, membership, etc. Rich Doug talked about you, EWD, phone from DC, sent me copies of your NASA papers and other related, wormholes are your thing, sent PACAF, that stands for Pacific Air Forces orders, USID, Lockheed slides, some reports I wrote for NASA. EWD, when? TW.
I think before we continue, it might be important just to expand, if we're able to, on what he was talking about in regards to wormholes, because this is his Air Force papers, right, in terms of his studies into manipulation of wormholes and things like this.
Yes, Eric Davis, if you Google his name, you can find a whole series of papers that he did, I believe, for Edwards Air Force Base, for their research laboratory. He did a bunch of studies and wrote a bunch of papers with reviews of information on everything from ball lightning. There's one paper that's very interesting called the Ball Lightning Study, where he talks about many different ball lightning type phenomenon and plasmoids and Kenneth Shoulders, exotic vacuum objects and other topics. But he also has papers about wormholes and theoretical ways to travel faster than light and a whole range of topics.
Right. So these are the kind of things that were sent over to kind of show who he was.
Yep. So that's what all that is about. Now to continue, Eric Davis, EWD, when? Thomas Wilson, September after Labor Day, Rich Doug told me I should talk to you about DIA careers, discuss history, mission, my career in that, etc. I knew better later when I saw your papers and stats they provided, remembered Oak's phone call and what he sent me and what he said about you, EWD. EWD, Eric Davis, what did you do with it? TW, had to do background checks. Doug Rich offered to, but wanted my own data to be sure. AFIO, that stands for, like I mentioned previously, the Association of Former Intelligence Officers, vouched. AFIO people, DC people, now in Vegas, vouched. TW, Thomas Wilson, gave deep, serious thought. Recalled Oak's call in 99. Oak really supported me. EWD had good arguments. EWD, what were they? TW, I, EWD, wouldn't talk to press, to groups, UFO or other such, no media connections, not to talk to Miller or Greer or related folks, no vested interest in publicity, money, fame, notoriety, etc. So again, right here, Thomas Wilson is saying that the reason he talked to Eric Davis is because he knew that he was trustworthy. He had a good background and that he wouldn't be, you know, just running his mouth to make money or get his face in a magazine or anything like that. So to continue, EWD, Eric Davis, we spent time discussing my background, answered his questions on my Air Force, NASA, and related work interest, history with Air Force jobs, what I did, education, career choice, etc. No mention of NIDS, that's National Institute for Discovery Science, that's Robert Bigelow's organization in the past, before TTSA. NIDS was an organization where many people like Hal Puthoff and Eric Davis and others were associated with, including Edgar Mitchell, where this document came from his files. So to continue, Oak mentioned J.A., that's John Alexander, NIDS in 99, but that's all that was said. Thomas Wilson, very furious, very angry about Miller, facial expression tense, angry voice, violated personal and professional trust, especially among intelligence colleagues, Navy officers. There's a Navy camaraderie among officers. Brotherhood violated that confidentiality. EWD, Eric W. Davis. How? TW, Thomas Wilson. Miller told Greer their conversation. Who knows whom else he and Greer told? So basically what that means is that Admiral Thomas Wilson was angry that Commander Willard, after being informed of Admiral Wilson's discovery of the special access programs holding ET hardware, passed along the information to Dr. Stephen Greer. Remember that even admitting an unacknowledged special access program exists is a violation of national security that could have made these people lose their clearances. So this was a big deal that Miller blabbed about this. And that was why Thomas Wilson was so upset. So now to continue, EWD note, Miller told Ed Mitchell, who only told me in 1999. So we know that Edgar Mitchell was the one who originally told Eric Davis about Admiral Wilson finding these special access programs and then being denied access and then being threatened by the senior review group. So to continue, TW, then he talks to Keene and Boston Globe articles came out. Not sure what he told Keene, but articles referenced me, TW. Furious, got calls from all over. EWD, that means Eric Davis. What was their nature? TW, sarcastic, stupid jokes, stupid comments, comments of surprise and derision that I would be talking about UFO nuts, nutty UFO groups, etc. EW, who? TW, co-workers, flag officers in the Pentagon, lower staff, civilian SES, that means Senior Executive Service, is what SES stands for. People in intel community I work with got calls about articles and didn't like it. TW, I'm taking risks talking to you, but trust Oak's word and it is good with me. We should have met Oak together face to face, but present health problems prevent that, too bad. So I'll take risk with you. Thomas Wilson continues here. Rich and Doug were members of the
the Association of Former Intelligence Officers.
Yeah, that's who they were. They say your word is good with them. AFIO connection important for trust. You, EW Davis, know how to be team player. Background check clear. No derogatory items found. Korean record good. And Air Force trust you. I'm running out of time, so let's go with this. If you blow my trust, I'll deny meeting you. Deny everything said. Won't meet with any more people without clearances to talk about this topic. Too risky because of security violation just by mentioning it. Very tightly held info. Absurdly closely held subject matter. Never seen anything like this program in black programs community. I want to talk about this for a second. And this is very important because this is why to this day, Admiral Wilson, when he is contacted, either will not speak at all about this topic or he denies like he did with Richard Dolan when Richard Dolan contacted him many years ago before this document right here leaked. And when Richard Dolan contacted him, he denied anything but the initial briefing at the Pentagon. He denied that he, you know, located the special access programs or anything like that. This is why he is so secretive about this. And this is why Eric Davis is refusing to this day to publicly confirm this document is legitimate. He does not deny it. That's important to note, too. If this document was not legitimate, anyone who knows Eric Davis's personality knows that if something is BS, he calls it out instantly. Mm-hmm. He is not hesitant at all to speak up if he disagrees with something. He has a pretty bold personality.
I would say it's important probably to just touch on the fact that Admiral Wilson chose the word absurdly when he was talking about the security around, you know, these types of projects, because this is a person that has already had access to special access programs and the type of security apparatus. He's used to that. And so for him to describe it in that type of format gives you an idea of just how unbelievably compartmentalized and secret this is, even in comparison to what we consider to be secret through normal standards.
Oh, yes. And we'll find out later in this document even more why he used that word absurdly, because these programs were not reporting honestly to the Special Access Program Oversight Committee. They were hiding behind other programs, disguising themselves. You know, they were literally breaking the law. They were getting the senior review group to cover for them. They had basically managed to somehow get the senior review group to break the law by allowing them not to report openly and honestly in the paperwork, in the files. They were not honestly reporting to the overall Special Access Program Oversight Committee what they were doing. You see, all of these programs have to report honestly and openly and transparently to the Special Access Program Oversight Committee. And if they don't report honestly, then they're breaking the law. And that's what these programs were doing. They were literally absurd. And so this is extremely sensitive information. And that's why he was so nervous about telling anyone what had happened and what he discovered, and why he basically was stressing to Eric Davis that if he leaked this information, that he wouldn't talk with anyone again about it. So I'll continue from there. EWD, okay then, what happened in April to June of 97? TW, Thomas Wilson, after parting with Miller, week later, he thinks, I made calls, knocked on a few doors, talked to a few people, went on for 45 days, thereabouts, on and off. Suggestion came from Ward, General M. Ward, which stands for General H. Marshall Ward, to go through the records group's files like an index system in OSTAT, Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Technology. He ran into Bill Perry in May of 97, talked quietly about this. He suggested the same thing. They told me of a special projects record group not belonging to usual special access programs, a special subset of the unacknowledged, carved out WAVE programs, not belonging to a usual SAP division as organized in 94 by Perry himself, set apart from the rest, but buried, covered by conventional special access programs. Now, this is very important right now, because a special access program is already a program that has extra security measures on top of it. And this was different not only from special access programs, but also unacknowledged special access program. An unacknowledged special access program is one that even the identity of it cannot be revealed. Yet it was even more, these UFO programs were even more secretive than that, because there's other ordinary unacknowledged special access programs that are called WAVE programs. These WAVE programs, they don't have the reporting requirements to Congress that ordinary unacknowledged special access programs have. Certain congressmen, usually committee chairmen of like defense and appropriations, instead of getting the paperwork, they can only get a oral briefing on these programs. And then they probably only happen if these special leaders in Congress and Senate, these committee chairmen, actually request it, if they know about it to begin with. And then there are carve-out programs. These carve-outs, that's like another layer of secrecy on top of it. That means that the contractor is responsible for all the inspection of the site, because every special access program, their secure facilities, has to abide by tons of regulations, the thickness of the walls, the soundproofing, the white noise generators, all the rules for locks on the doors and cameras, and also little things about the facility, and you know, and restrictions on computer access. There's all kinds of rules, but in a carved out program, the Pentagon is not responsible for it anymore. All that responsibility goes to the contractor, which, you know, is kind of ridiculous in my opinion, because it basically transfers so much authority away. But these UFO programs were even beyond that. They were basically in another special subset.
And who was Bill Perry at this time in 97?
In 97, Bill Perry had already left. He was no longer Secretary of Defense. And there was another Secretary of Defense at the time in 97. And I believe that was William Cohen, I believe. Let me check that real fast in my notes. I was going to get to that in a little bit, but I will verify that right now. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was William Cohen, was the Secretary of Defense at the time. And we know that as we go on in this, we know the identities of the members of the senior review group that threatened him, or at least I'm 99% certain we do. I mean, we don't know absolutely for sure about, for example, the chairman of it. There's a little issue there we will get into, but we know who was all involved. So there's people that journalists could actually try to get interviews with if they so desired. So these programs, these UFO special access programs, were both in a separate subset while they were hiding out behind other programs. Admiral Wilson described them as being set apart from the ordinary programs, but buried and covered by conventional special access programs. So they were hiding out, and that was a major problem. Now, to continue with the document, EWD, who was USDAT, basically this, I think that's a little typo talking about Alstat, that could stand for Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition Technology. Oh, yeah, yeah. That stands for Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition Technology, was Paul Kaminsky. And he talked to that was the previous one. That was the previous undersecretary, I believe, at the time. He talked to both Paul and Mike Kostinick. Mike Kostinick was a brigadier general. Paul Kaminsky, now this is important to note. This is a little thing in the document that could be important. Paul Kaminsky was not the undersecretary of defense during the saga. I have looked this up. I've looked up the records. Paul Kaminsky was the undersecretary of defense for acquisition and technology before this. Thomas Wilson did not want to give the name of who was actually the undersecretary of defense for acquisition and technology when this was going on, because that was a different individual, and he probably didn't want to reveal the name of the who would have been the in charge of the senior review group. And we'll get to his name later on. So this is important right here. And it's not because this is a red flag, like some people like to say about this document. No, this is not a red flag. This is not an error. He was obviously not wanting to admit who it was that was on the senior review group that denied him access to these programs. So that it was not Paul Kaminsky. And Michael Kostinick, he was the actually also on the senior review group previously under Paul Kaminsky. He was the director of special programs, and we're going to get to that in a minute. So EWD asked Michael Kostinick, T.W. Thomas Wilson, in Paul's office, Alstat, Director of Special Programs in Alstat, Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition Technology and Logistics, as organized, reorganized by Perry in 94. And when he says reorganized in Perry in 94, the whole Special Access Program organizational structure started being reorganized in the early 90s. And there's documents online about it that are declassified. There's tons of information anybody can look up with a Google search about that and read all about it. And he says Mike is also, and when he says is, he was not all of this at the time. He was this before Admiral Wilson started looking for these documents. So Mike is also director of SAPCO, Special Access Programs Coordination Office. Mike is member and executive secretary at SAP, Special Access Program Oversight Committee, in capacity as SAPCO director. Mike is a member of the Senior Review Group. This was before this saga, when Admiral Wilson was looking for these programs. So that's important to point out. Thomas Wilson, I'm continuing the read now. Thomas Wilson was Deputy Director, DIA Assistant, Joint Chief of Staff, J2 at time. Boss was Director of DIA, General Patrick Hughes. General Patrick Hughes, we know that Dr. Stephen Greer briefed on the UFO topic after their original briefing at the Pentagon with Admiral Wilson. It was at a later date. So now, Thomas Wilson. So found the unusual record group. Read the index abstracts, EWD, budget info, TW, no budget info. That is kept in separate records for audit purposes. A security budget record is copied into a folder for the program. Talked to Mike, who said it was like 2 to 3 times the program budget, but there were times when it went as high as 6-7 times the core budget. Thought it was absurdly high. Said Perry wanted investigation on that, but was told to drop it. So get this. The Secretary of Defense wants to investigate why there's the budget of these special access programs is surging. And he's the Secretary of Defense, and he is told to drop it. Does that give you a hint of the extreme power of these UFO special access programs? And if Majestic 12 does exist, if this UFO cabal does indeed exist, which I believe it does, because there's evidence even beyond this document that MJ-12 does indeed exist, or at least did exist, that they had extreme power where they could just command the Secretary of Defense to do something and he would just do it. That is just absurd. That is,
well, is this the absurdity. Is the meeting with Dr. Stephen Greer and General Patrick Hughes, the separate meeting, the one that happened afterwards, is that the meeting in which General, because there's a citizens disclosure hearing where Stephen Greer is talking about his interactions with these types of briefings, and I'm pretty sure he was referring to General Patrick Hughes when he said that he was providing him this, you know, this briefing, and the general went over to a shelf and picked up an alien doll, and said, "This is all I've been given with my questions, you know, regarding this topic." And like, this is, you know, he had been basically handed a toy ET doll.
Yeah, yeah, that was what Dr. Stephen Greer said about General Patrick Hughes when he interviewed him. He went to his office and he, you know, gave him a briefing and was talking to him. And General Hughes, you know, got this little toy alien off the shelf and said, "I tried to get answers about this and this is all they gave me."
Yeah.
So they're willing to deny access to the DIA director. They're also willing to even tell the Secretary of Defense to drop it.
And I think kind of shows a level of, I don't know, like it's jest, really, isn't it? They're kind of making fun of the general at that point with giving him a toy. You know, it's not just a denial access, but they're mocking him.
Of course they're mocking him, because the people that run this cover-up think they're better than everyone. They think that they are elitist. They think they have some special authority, some special ability that makes them the ones that should be in charge of the whole show. But they're not. so we don't need to get too off topic because I have
we'll finish this slide off now because it's almost at the bottom.
Okay. So EWD, who told him that? TW, he didn't want to answer my question on that. Said I could find out something from Judy Daly. Judith Daly, Assistant Deputy Under Secretary of Defense for Advanced Development, AUSTAT. And so I'm moving on. Thomas Wilson, she said by phone, talking about Judith Daly, the Assistant Deputy Under Secretary of Defense for Advanced Development. So Thomas Wilson, she said by phone call that security and other program budgets, budget records, were being revamped and relocated to their own records group. Security budgets were sometimes cumulative and not annual numbers. Easy to see how misunderstanding occurs when comparing to annual program budget figures. 6 to 7 times could be 2 to 5 years cumulative total. There have been errors in way security budgets reported. I want to say one thing here without going off topic too far. The military refuses, the DOD refuses to have a complete, total, transparent audit ever. This has been in the news. This has been in the media before, the mainstream media. And I think one reason for it is that if there is ever a complete, total audit of the DOD military budget, some of these different programs could be exposed, and they don't want that. So to continue, TW, Thomas Wilson, Perry ordered all these issues to be reorganized and straightened out to improve audit transparency. And that was what happened in 94 when he tried to reorganize it. Obviously, it didn't really get reorganized to the extent it needed to be. So EWD, change subject. So what SAP compartment did you find in? TW, core secret, won't say. Now, what's a core secret? A core secret is a piece of information so sensitive that if released, it would likely result in immediate failure of a program. So a core secret is literally something so hot, so important, such a critical piece of information that it would just like completely reveal a program or some critical aspect of a program that would make it fail. And so EW, Eric Davis asks again, code name, TW, again, won't say, core secret, EWD, who was the project contractor or the U.S. government agency that runs the program, TW, an aerospace technology contractor, one of the top ones in the United States. EWD, who? TW, core secret, can't tell. EWD, defense contractor, question mark? TW, yes, the best one of them. EWD, intelligence 2, question mark? TW, in the corporate portfolio. So he's saying intelligence is in the corporate portfolio. EWD, give a hint. TW, sorry, no. Now, before we move on, I'm going to give some of the evidence for the fact that it's most likely Lockheed Martin is the contractor they are talking about. In my opinion, Lockheed Martin is obviously the contractor that Admiral Wilson refuses to name. There's a multitude of evidence for this, including the facts that, number one, Lockheed Martin is the largest top aerospace contractor in the United States. And I think, maybe I'm wrong, but it's always been. They are also considered by many to be the best such contractor. They are extremely well respected beyond any other aerospace contractor that I'm aware of. Not saying there's not other very good aerospace contractors, but they are basically a cut above the rest. Number two, you can go to Lockheed Martin's website and see that they offer intelligence services, which was mentioned as one aspect of the contractor by Admiral Wilson. Number three, now this is important now. Lockheed Martin built what's called the Fluxliner ARV Alien Reproduction Vehicle, which was seen by Brad Sorensen at their Palmdale facility and elsewhere by other witnesses. There's a documentary all about this called Zero Point, the Fluxliner ARV. It's a fantastic documentary. It tells the whole story of the Fluxliner. It's extremely well done, and I would suggest everyone, you know, go to YouTube and do a search for Zero Point, the Fluxliner ARV. So Zero Point, the Fluxliner ARV, and it provides a wealth of information. So, and I'm convinced that Lockheed did build this anti-gravity craft that was reverse engineered from alien technology called the Fluxliner. Number four, Tom DeLonge, who was the founder of To the Stars Academy, has stated the anti-gravity black triangle, the TR-3B, is real and was built by Lockheed Skunk Works. His primary insiders were General William McCaslin, who had been on the senior review group of the Special Access Program Oversight Committee, and Robert F. Weiss of Lockheed. And that's what's so interesting about this, is because a lot of people don't realize General Will McCaslin, who was the general that Tom DeLonge talked about for so long, eventually when WikiLeaks happened, the identities of General William McCaslin was leaked out, and also the identity of Robert F. Weiss of Lockheed was leaked out. So there you have General Will McCaslin, who after this period of time, years later, after Admiral Wilson's saga was over with, General Will McCaslin was on the senior review group as the director of special programs. And that is why he's such an important man. Tom DeLonge loves to say that the general is such an important man. Well, he's an important man not because he worked at Wright-Patterson, but he's an important man because he was the director of special programs. And that's the nexus between the DOD and the black world of these special access programs, and carved out special access programs and waived special access programs. So he would be in the perfect position to know about any such UFO-related reverse engineering projects. And then with Robert Weiss of Lockheed being one of Tom DeLonge's insiders, there you have someone who I believe was at one point the general manager of Skunk Works, of Lockheed Skunk Works. So I think this is more evidence that Lockheed was the contractor. And then if you listen to some of the interviews Eric Davis has given, in one particular interview, he stated that he had met the former vice president of a legacy aerospace corporation, and was told by that individual, the former vice president, that he had previously worked on an ET reverse engineering project, but he didn't any longer. And we don't know for certain. I'm not saying this is absolutely the case, but it seems to me that it's likely this individual was Robert F. Weiss of Lockheed, who was in charge of Skunk Works. But it could have been someone else. We just don't know. But he also, what's interesting is Eric Davis talks about he knew the vice president of a legacy aerospace corporation that I believe lived in California, and with his family saw a UFO right at the beach, basically. And this guy, who would have been briefed in all the black projects and knew what other countries were doing as well, what kind of craft they were building, nothing fit the profile of this UFO he saw with his family. And so because of all of this, I believe that the evidence is overwhelming. This contractor was indeed Lockheed Martin. So EWD, what happened when you found the contractor? TW, Thomas Wilson, I made several calls. End of May 97, first to Paul, that'd been Paul Kaminsky, Mike Kostinick, and William Perry, to confirm I had the right contractor and program manager to talk to. EWD, they confirm. TW, yes. EWD, then TW, end of May 97, made three calls to the program manager, one of them conference call with security director and corporate attorney. Confusion on their part as why I was looking for them and what I wanted from them or wanted to know about. Very testy tone from all of them. And this makes perfect sense here because by law, every special access program has to have a project director, number one, a security director, number two, and a corporate attorney. That's law. And they had that. So that fits perfectly. That's more evidence that this document is indeed legitimate. It fits with the law about these special access programs. So now to move on. EWD, what do you mean? TW, they were agitated about my calling, surprised by call. EWD, what you asked them. The grammar in this is not perfect, by the way.
No, I mean, it's a little difficult. It's a bit disjointed. But for everyone who's listening, like, you can watch the video and there's documents up on screen so you can follow along with this because it is written as quite hurried notes. It's not a fully flowing transcript. But yeah, hopefully if you're watching along, you shouldn't find it too difficult. Sorry, I just wanted to let people know who were listening only that they can watch it and see the documents on screen.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I highly suggest people watch the screen and read this as we're talking about this because it would help dramatically for people to know what is going on. So I'll continue. TW for Thomas Wilson. Yes. EWD, Eric W. Davis. What was that? What words? TW. I read their program record in the AUSTAT Office of the Undersecretary for Defense Acquisition and Technology Special Program Records Group and wanted to know about their crashed UFO program, what their role in that was, what they had, etc. Also asked if they heard of MJ-12 or some such organizational code relating to crashed, recovered UFO craft. EWD, reaction on phone to that? TW, yes. Asked who I talked to before I called them, so I told them, and they weren't happy with the answer. EWD, you mean about Perry, Paul, etc.? TW, oh no, I didn't tell them I talked to those guys. So he was basically, he covered for the people that helped him locate these programs. He didn't tell the special access program managers who led him to these programs, or at least not Perry and Paul. So EWD, whom else you talked to? TW, there were other program managers I called. EWD, you didn't mention that before. TW, thought I said something. EWD, who were they? Now, this is where it gets interesting. TW, three programs who said they weren't what or who I was looking for. Four programs that referred me back to the present threesome. So he had to end up calling multiple programs to find the four programs that were actually the UFO reverse engineering programs. And the threesome he's talking about isn't necessarily three programs, but it was the three representatives of the special access program that he interacted with, the three individuals. That's what the threesome stands for. And what's interesting about this, and I really want to mention this because I think it's important and very interesting, is there's a scientist named Bernard Haish. And Bernard Haish has a website. I believe it used to be called UFO Skeptic. I believe it's been taken down or removed. But people have an archive of it so that information is still available. But he has written papers, I believe, with Putoff. He's very close to people in NIDS and very close to some people that's in TTSA now. And he had some very provocative statements. And I want to read one of these to you. So this is from Bernard Haish. From his website, ufoskeptic.org, which is no longer up. But he's not really a skeptic, and you'll see as I read this. So, quote, a group of four related but separate unacknowledged SCI programs tracing back to a 1947 Truman Memorandum still exist and were housed as of the 1990s in major aerospace companies such as, for example, Lockheed, TRW, Raytheon, Aerospace Corporation, etc. These would be expensive programs since the cost of secrecy can be several times higher than the research. The ATIP program has no relation to these four much better funded deep black ones. Indeed, the black programs collectively have budgets in the $10 billion range and up. Topics apparently include both reverse engineering and extraterrestrial biology. So he was, and he posted this long before the Admiral Thomas Wilson document ever came out. So it sounds to me like Bernard Haich had been talking to Eric Davis or other sources that told him the same thing. So to continue, EWD, why the ladder? And when he says why the ladder, that's talking to you about how he found these programs. TW, because they were part of it in different compartments, placed in different layers of the compartment pyramid, split up to do different things or parts of it. They're all in the same records group, but their connection to each other is not obvious. Typical thing, but unusual in records. So you see, they were working hard to disguise themselves, but they shouldn't have been trying to disguise themselves because the only people who would see these records were the Special Access Program Oversight Committee, the group that they were legally required to submit honest, transparent documentation to. So they were literally hiding out not only from, you know, other nations and hiding out from the public. They were hiding out and disguising themselves from their legal authority within the DOD. That's what makes these programs outright criminal. This is an outrage. And this is why journalists need to investigate this, not only because the UFO reality is so significant in and of itself. That is a big part of it, that yes, intelligent extraterrestrial beings are visiting Earth and they have crashed and we have intact craft and we have bodies. And there is a long series of such recoveries of craft and bodies. And we've had successful reverse engineering. That's part of it. But the other part of it is how it has been covered up and how these rogue special access programs and the corporations they're managed by has actually broken the law by hiding out like this and not reporting transparently to their oversight committees. That is part of the big story here. And I hope reporters will start investigating that. So to continue, EWD, what then? TW, I told Threesome. Again, the Threesome was the project manager, the security director, and the corporate attorney of the special access programs that he found. So he says, I told Threesome I wanted formal briefing, tour, etc. Was exploiting my regulatory authority as deputy director DIA, assistant joint chief of staff J2. Told them my not being briefed was oversight they needed to correct. I demanded. TW, they needed to discuss this. His demand, so hung up. Got called 2 days later, and they said they don't want to talk on phone and arrange for face-to-face meeting at their facility. EWD, did you go? TW, Thomas Wilson, yes, 10 days later, mid-June or so, flew out there. And when he says flew out there, we don't know exactly where it was. I'm guessing it was either on the West Coast or in the southwestern part of the United States. Maybe it was to Area 51. We know Tom DeLonge was taken to Area 51, where he spoke with Robert F. Weiss of Lockheed. And that was one of his original insiders who were telling him things like the flux liner. He was not told specifically about the flux liner, but Tom DeLonge was told about the TR-3B, which is another anti-gravity craft. The TR-3B is featured in Tom DeLonge's book, Secret Machines. And Tom DeLonge used to be adamant before he really clammed up on this stuff after the WikiLeaks outed his insiders. He used to be adamant that the TR-3B is indeed a real craft that we have built. And if you listen to Tom DeLonge's interviews like he did back in the day in 2016 on Coast to Coast AM, he said flat out that he was told that, yes, we have indeed cracked gravity, that there are reverse engineering programs. And so since Tom DeLonge met with Robert F. Weiss of Lockheed at Area 51, maybe this is where Admiral Wilson went. We don't know. Maybe he went to Palmdale to the big hangar out there, or maybe he went to another Lockheed facility. We just don't know, but he flew out there. So now to continue, met in their conference room in their secure vault. Another term for that is a SCIF, a secure compartmented information facility. Three of them show up, EWD, three guys with whom you had telephone conversation, TW, yes, same three, security director, NSA retired, CI expert, that's counterintelligence, CI stands for counterintelligence, program director, corporate attorney, call themselves the watch committee or the gatekeepers, EWD, why that phrase or name, TW, I asked. They said they were formed out of necessity to protect themselves after a near disaster in the past almost blew their cover. Something to do with an agreement that was reached with a couple Pentagon SESs. Again, that means senior executive service overseeing SAPs in those days were vague about when that was. EWD, what was this? TW, let me finish. They said years ago in the past, an audit investigation led to them, and it wasn't supposed to. They were nearly outed. A battle, a nasty back and forth between them and the investigator and his Pentagon chief ensured, like a tug of war for program transparency. They told me money was the issue. Their hiding out became the other issue. So this was about money. This was an audit, and that led to them almost being outed. So I'll continue. Some kind of threat was leveled to blow the lid off them, so they backed down and let the investigator in to complete his job. They worked very hard to keep the program hidden. And one thing I want to say about this is the only reason they interface at all with the DOD and why other programs managed by the Department of Energy probably interface with the Department of Energy is simply because of the fact they want the money. If it wasn't for the money they could get, this would they wouldn't even interface with any aspect of the government or the military, because these are corporate entities that control this now. But they're leeching off the taxpayers. They're leeching off the United States government, billions right. of dollars. And so that's why they were even interfacing with the senior review group.
So like things like the DOE and all of the different private contractors, essentially, even the Department of Energy essentially would only interact with the DOD, you're saying, for funding with these programs and nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, like if you were one of these programs and let's say you're being managed by Lockheed, you know, the only reason your program would be interfacing with the Department of Defense or the Department of Energy would be to get money, because they don't want to admit that they exist. They don't want anyone in the military to know they exist. They don't want anyone in the Department of Energy to know they exist. They want to do their work in secret. And there's reasons for that we'll get into later on.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just because that's their money supply. And for some reason, they have a golden ticket to get whatever they want. At least that's my opinion, and that's what others seem to suggest. Some people may disagree, but they seem to have, you know, the ability to, like we know here, even manipulate the senior review group to cover for them. It's really a tragedy.
And is the audit that's been mentioned here, do you think that's got anything to do with the missing $2.3 trillion, I think it was, that was mentioned back in the early 2000s?
I'm not sure. I don't really know for certain, but apparently it was some kind of audit. We don't know what triggered the audit. We do know at one point it mentions in this document that Perry wanted information about why they were going over budget, and he was told to drop it. So I don't know exactly how to answer your question.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's also been rumors about there being it being caused by the health union strikes.
I don't think it was that. I really don't, because if you read this document, it really sounds like it has to do with money, a financial audit. It doesn't sound like it has something to do with a lawsuit of individuals. Because that story about Area 51 that you were referring to, basically a long time ago, they were burning toxic waste and chemicals in trenches and basically making a lot of employees at Area 51 sick. And the clouds were going right over housing areas at Area 51. And I don't think this sounds like that. It just doesn't fit to me. You know, if anyone knows information that could, you know, make that fit, hey, I'd be open to hearing it. But it just doesn't fit with this document. This makes it sound like it was a financial issue, that somebody looked at the budget and said, hey, you're going six times over. What's going on? And that triggered the investigation. So any other questions before I move on?
No, I think we should move. Let's keep flowing through it.
Okay, sounds good. EWD, what happened with that? Talking about the audit, TW, he was officially briefed, given tour, shown the program. Eric W. Davis, did they show him a craft or hardware they said was alien or from a UFO? Thomas Wilson, didn't say more about that. Said after that episode, a formal agreement was struck with Pentagon people, Special Access Program Oversight Committee, to prevent this in future. Didn't want a repeat. Special criteria were established in agreement, a special circumstance that must meet rigorous access criteria set by contractor committee. No United States government personnel are to gain access unless they meet the criteria to be administered by contractor committee, which was the threesome he talked about before, the gatekeepers, which was the program director, the attorney, and the security director. Irregardless of the tickets in position, United States government personnel possessed literally their way or the highway. And it's absolute madness, this position, because this means potentially, you know, Joint Chiefs of Staff wouldn't be allowed to know. Other senior military leadership wouldn't be allowed to know that extraterrestrials and godlike vehicles, you know, with all kinds of abilities to manipulate gravity, mass, inertia, or literally flying in inner skies and occasionally crashing. To keep that away from the 99% of the military leadership is simply illegal and beyond criminal, in my opinion. It's recklessly irresponsible. So to move on, EWD, what are the criteria? Thomas Wilson, I asked for that and they refused to give answer. I was mad. Implication is now, to me, they operate without official oversight or any justification. Politically dangerous place to be. So even Thomas Wilson here expresses his outrage about how they have went rogue, basically. They have no official oversight. They're doing their own thing. And the proof of that is what happens a little further on in this document, how they threaten him, how they try to intimidate him into dropping the issue. And we'll get into that in a little bit. So he continues, threesome concerned with who Thomas Wilson had talked to at Pentagon or elsewhere by phone, fax, email, wanted accounting of conversations, concerned about new exposure. Purpose of meeting was to tell me this. So the meeting was not to give him access. The meeting that he flew out to at their secure facility was not to even consider giving him access. It was to figure out who he talked to. And that just shows their paranoia about even letting the people with that have a need to know into this program. Because Admiral Wilson, you have to realize, he wrote intelligence briefings for the members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And if they don't have a need to know that alien spacecraft are flying in our skies that can do circles around F-18s or F-22s, the stealth bomber, anything we have, that their craft are, you know, tremendously superior, then, I mean, that to me, it makes the whole DOD absurd. If they cannot be told about this, what's the point in having the DOD? But anyway, to move on, EWD, what? Thomas Wilson, that they weren't going to let me in the door. EWD, why? They said my tickets were all confirmed and valid, but I was not on the bigot list. The bigot list is a term used in special access programs. You could also call it the access list. It's a list of people who are allowed to be in a program or know about a program or be briefed into the program. So Thomas Wilson goes on to say, my tickets alone were not enough. I didn't meet the special criteria, so need to know authorization was not being granted. Went back and forth with them over these points, primarily with security director and attorney. Thomas Wilson argued more. They wouldn't accept my arguments that they fell under my statutory oversight and regulatory authority as deputy director of DIA, under purview for my right to have need to know oversight, audit, justifications, issues, et cetera, et cetera. Regulatory and statutory authority as deputy director DIA not relevant or pertinent to nature of their program. Then they pulled out their bigot list to convince me otherwise, several pages long, dated 1990, updated 1993. EWD, who was on it? Recognized names? TW, that is core secret. So again, he doesn't want to reveal who was in it because that would be a core secret. And if you read this document carefully, and we're going to talk about a few names in a little bit, the reason he didn't give the names of the people who were on the senior review group at the time is because they knew this secret. They knew these core secrets, and he didn't want to give that information to Eric Davis. And we're going to reveal who they are in a little bit. So to go on, willing to say that most were program employees, names and titles, job titles, civilians, didn't recognize any military personnel could be there. EWD, any politicians? TW, no. No White House names. No president. As we know, for a very, very long time, the presidents of the United States have not even been briefed on this topic. At least that's what most people think, that even the president of the United States is kept out the loop. No congressional people. No congressional staffers. EWD, any in Clinton or Bush senior administrations? TW, no, but handful of names were Pentagon individuals I recognized, few from Alstat, one from another department, another at NSC, who is Pentagon SES employee. So NSC, I believe, would be National Security Council, I believe. Program managers said they were not a weapons program, not any intelligence program, not any special ops or logistics program. Doesn't fit these categories. I asked what they were then. Loud groan from the program manager. Security director and attorney say it's okay to say it. EWD, Eric Davis. Say what? Thomas Wilson. They were a reverse engineering program, something recovered years ago in the past. Technological hardware was recovered. So I thought they meant recovered Soviet Chinese hardware and reverse engineer it, like a missile or intelligence platform or aircraft. Actually came to meeting expecting to find a sensitive foreign collection in reverse engineering operation. Thought UFOs used as a cover for that. So I said that, and they said they weren't that either. They had program manager talking, a craft, an intact craft they believe could fly. Space question mark, air question mark, water question mark, dimensions question mark. Was it from overseas or not? Said no, could not be possible, not possible. Why, I asked, where did it come from? Program manager said they didn't know where it was from. They had some ideas on this. It was technology that was not of this earth, not made by man, not by human hands. Said we're trying to understand and exploit technology. Their program was going on for years and years with very slow progress, agonizingly slow with little or no success, painful lack of collaboration to get help from outside community of experts and facilities to assist effort, must remain isolated and use own facilities and cleared personnel, tough environment to work, about 400 to 800 bigot list count, workers varying in number with funding or personal changes. Now, I want to address something that's critical here. All of this sob story about having little or no success, about not being able to explore this technology like they wanted to, not being able to figure it out, this is a lie. I'm certain of it. I am not saying they had figured out every little device, every little gadget, every secret of these vehicles, but they have had billions of dollars on an annual budget either since Roswell or even before Roswell, since there's evidence there were crashes in 1941 and 1945. 1941 was the Cape Girardeau incident where a UFO crashed. In 1945, there was an alleged crash in San Antonio, not Texas, but San Antonio, New Mexico. And there's a book about that case. So these special access programs, these black programs, had had a very long time to look at this technology. And they have had billions of dollars to work on this technology with. They've also been able to do that without any restrictions whatsoever because they are basically acting above the law. And they have the best of human technology to try to figure this out. And if you believe the stories about a living alien that survived in one of this series of crash recoveries, then they might have even had an alien being that could tell them information about the technology or how it worked. And then when you consider the witnesses of the Flux Liner, ARV, that was the alien reproduction vehicle that was reverse engineered that Lockheed built. And then you consider what Tom DeLonge was told by General William McCaslin and Robert F. Weiss and others about how there were crash recoveries. We reverse engineered the technology. We cracked gravity control. I think this is a lie. And the reason they lied to Admiral Thomas Wilson and claimed that they had had no success was because they had already decided not to give him access. And since they already decided not to read him in, it would have made no sense whatsoever from their point of view to tell him, oh yes, 30, 40 years ago, we managed to build an anti-gravity vehicle and it can go to Mars and back. And since then, we've built a string of prototypes of additional vehicles that fly even better. They wouldn't tell him that. That would be absurd from their point of view. because he would have ran back to the Pentagon, told everyone about it, and he would have never shut up about it. He would have never dropped the issue. And then they would have been forced to take even more extreme measures to shut him up from their point of view. So it would have made no sense to tell him the truth. So they lied and they tell him the sob story. Now, I will say that it's possible there are certain crafts they have figured out and certain ones they have not, because I think it's pretty obvious there's been many different types of UFOs that have been sighted, and there's probably different types of UFOs that have been recovered, and some of them might have slightly different propulsion systems. So it's possible, for example, they could have very easily reversed, and when I say very easily, I should say relatively easily, reverse engineered the ones that utilized self-organizing plasmas in the core to produce a bubble of vector potential, basically like a warp bubble from Star Trek, to nullify mass, inertia, and gravity, and to propel the craft. So it's possible they could have had success with that, which yielded the flux liner and yielded the TR-3B. But then there could have been some other ones that maybe used what we hear talked about all the time, you know, these nano-layered metamaterials. You know, maybe they were a little more difficult. Maybe they didn't have success with that. But I think they did have some success. And I'm certain they did reverse engineer some of these vehicles, and they did build their own anti-gravity craft because of what we know about the flux liner and the TR-3B. So they were lying to him, and people need to realize that he was being lied to. And I hope and pray that reporters in the future that report on this don't buy into this lie and believe that the special access programs never had any success. They did have success, and they didn't want him to know, and they don't want anyone else to know either, because the fundamentals of manipulating gravity, mass, and inertia is not really that complicated, and that's the big secret. They don't want that fact to get out, because if the fact gets out that, hey, gravity control doesn't take 400 years of research, you can do it now, that we actually started building these vehicles, reverse-engineered vehicles of our own in the 60s, if that got out, every other country in the world would instantly start building their own vehicles. And they would be building anti-gravity vehicles that could run circles around any conventional jet that Lockheed builds. So they would have hundreds of competitors, and that would hurt their bottom line. That could destroy their traditional business, where Lockheed and these other aerospace companies sell jet fighters to the military, because jet fighters would instantaneously become obsolete. And there would be hundreds of other countries and companies selling anti-gravity vehicles, which could go to Mars and back in a couple of hours. And they don't want that. So I guess I'll move on. So to continue, I should give a little preface to this. Thomas Wilson is stating that he asked Miller's questions. Miller questions asked Roswell. Craft bodies, autopsies, Holloman Air Force Base landing, MJ-12 and leaked documents, Zamora, which is a UFO incident where I believe in 1964 a police officer claimed to see a craft launch, a UFO launch, and a couple little beings standing next to it in New Mexico, and Bent Waters. Bent Waters is a very famous UFO case in England that took place. To continue, they were mum, declined to discuss these. TW threatened to go to the Special Access Program Oversight Committee to complain and gain access to their program. They said, go ahead and do what you must. I was angry because they defied my authority to be read in with good logical reason. They wouldn't budge. Their tone was very testy, terse throughout the conversation. EWD, Eric Davis, what was the outcome? TW, Thomas Wilson, meeting broke up and I returned to Washington. EWD, what about Corso? Now, this is me talking. Colonel Philip J. Corso, was a individual who had a long military career, and he wrote a book the day after Roswell. And in this book, and in many, many interviews, and in a non, I would say, spiced up book that is even better than The Day After Roswell, which is his original manuscript, which is online and published for free. You can look it up, his original manuscript, which I suggest everyone look at. He described seeing a dead body in 1947. And this dead body, you know, did not look human. He was not at Roswell, but he was at another military base. I believe it was Fort Riley, Kansas. And a shipment went through the base. And at night, him and a friend of his looked in one of the crates and saw this body in a big, giant vial, like a huge glass vial. And also during the 60s, he claimed that when he was the head of Foreign Technology Division, in the Pentagon, which it was verified he held that position, that he had access to little pieces of hardware from the Roswell crash. So that's an interesting story if anybody wants to look it up. And I believe he's very credible. Eric Davis has stated that he has investigated Corso intensely and verified everything he said, and that Philip J. Corso was indeed the real deal and that he was telling the truth. So to move on, T.W., Thomas Wilson, Greer talked about Corso on April 9th. Miller showed me the book during 2-hour private conversation. Didn't have time to read it through. Didn't buy a copy. Didn't bring Corso up at meeting. But comparing Corso's story to what I learned at meeting is more than enough to believe Corso told the truth about seeing alien hardware. EWD, Eric Davis, did you complain to SAPOC, which is Special Access Program Oversight Committee? TW, yes, call the subgroup members, senior review group members, to a meeting at Pentagon. Told them what happened. They responded that they would sustain the contractor on their access denial. So I ended up arguing with them for a while. Broke up in 20 minutes, and they said they would meet me in 2 to 3 days. Got the call 2 days later near the end of June and met again with senior review group members. So first of all, I want to say this. They immediately said they would sustain the contractor. What Admiral Thomas Wilson just did was he revealed to the senior review group that there was these rogue special access programs, which were hiding out, not reporting transparently to the oversight committee, disguising themselves in the paperwork. And he should have been applauded for that. Admiral Thomas Wilson should have gotten an award for that. They should have jumped up and said, thank you so much for revealing this to us. We will investigate this right away. We cannot have special access programs that are running around without telling us what exactly they are doing. No, instead, they decided to sustain the contractor and deny Admiral Thomas Wilson access. That shows their complicity. That's the important word here, complicity in this cover-up. The senior review group were in on it. For whatever reason, they were in on it. So now to continue. EWD, when? Talking about when this happened, this meeting with them happened, before the last week of June, 97. They told me that they were sustaining the contractor, that I was to immediately drop the matter and let it go. Forget about it, as I did not have purview over their project. It didn't fall within my oversight, etc. I became very angry, started yelling when I should have kept my mouth shut. EWD, Eric Davis, Miller and Greer said you nearly got busted. TW, close to that. Told Miller, senior review group chairman said, if I didn't follow their suggestion, that I would not see director DIA promotion, get early retirement, lose 1 or 2 stars along the way. Really incredibly angry. upset over this, livid. Why such a big deal over this, considering the position of trust I have in the Pentagon? I do have relevant regulatory statutory authority over their program. That's my position. Now, he was actually threatened by the chairman of the senior review group. So instead of being given an award or at least a thank you for exposing these programs that were not reporting honestly to the committees that have oversight over them, he was actually threatened. That sounds outright criminal to me. And when it comes to the identity of the chairman of the senior review group, of course, I want to stay flat out. I'm not 100% sure that this individual was the chairman. But at the time, Noel Longmire Jr. Was the acting undersecretary of defense. He was the acting, not the regular undersecretary of defense, but he was the acting undersecretary of defense, and he was the deputy undersecretary of defense. So he may have been serving as the senior review group chairman at the time. It makes sense that he would, because typically it is the undersecretary of defense that serves at that in that time period. It was the undersecretary of defense that would serve as a senior review group chairman. However, since he was only the acting undersecretary of defense, we do not know that for 100% fact. We do not. I will make that clear. We do not know that. Also, Billy Cox, a UFO researcher who has a website and a blog, he actually contacted Noel Longmire Jr., and Noel Longmire Jr. Denied knowledge of this. And so I want to put that there. Noel Longmire Jr. denied knowledge of this whole incident. He does admit that he did hold both of those positions at the time, acting undersecretary of defense and deputy undersecretary of defense, but he claims that it was a higher review group that made that decision, which I don't know if I buy into his explanation or not. I personally think that he knows more than he is telling, but that's just my opinion. I wish more people would interview him. You know, I would love to see reporters interview him and ask some more questions. So maybe he could give more detailed answers, but I will go on. So EWD, is it because funding comes from you or through you or director of DIA, TW, core secret, can't answer. EWD, back to bigot list, can you describe type of people? TW, corporate types, scientists and technicians, engineers, scientists, managers, etc. Any military organizations you recognize? TW, none, just AUSTAT people, and two on the Special Access Program Oversight Committee. One other Pentagon office in December 97, Paul was out as Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Technology, left government, so Mike K was replaced too. By whom? Jacques Gansler was new Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Technology, started December 97. Mike K was replaced by Brigadier General M. Ward. Now, this is not really crystal clear here, and I'll give an explanation why. I think that Admiral Wilson was attempting not to give the identity of the members of the senior review group to Eric Davis during this conversation, because he's mentioning Jacques Gansler was the new Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Technology. And he also mentions the individual before him, which would have been Paul Kaminsky. However, he doesn't mention Noel Longmire Jr., who was serving as both Deputy Undersecretary of Defense and Acting Undersecretary of Defense. For some reason, he just does not mention him, you know, and that just doesn't fit right. It seems like he should have been mentioned. You know, does that mean that he was the chairman of the senior review group at the time serving in that position? We don't know for 100%. We just don't. But it seems to me it's possible. Number two, he doesn't mention the name, the director of special programs at the time, and we have his name, and I will provide that as we continue through this document. And there's another member of the senior review group, which I will name later on in this document. So he's not naming the people that are on the senior review group at the time, because that would that might be considered a core secret, and he doesn't want to give that out. So I'll just continue with this. Any military organizations you recognize? This is Eric Davis asking the question. TW, none, just OWSTAT people, and two on Special Access Project Oversight Committee, one other Pentagon office. In December 97, Paul was out at Undersecretary of Defense of Acquisition Technology, left government. Sir Mike K. replaced to EWD, by whom TW Jacques Gansler was new USDAT, started December 97. Mike K. was replaced by Brigadier General Michael Ward. EWD, were Paul K. and Mike K. and Jacques Gansler and General Ward the ones on the bigot list you recognized? TW, won't answer that. TW, talked to Gansler in January 98 about my June 97 meetings. He was briefed by someone. Surprised me. EWD, Eric Davis, what did he say? TW, UFOs are real. So-called alien abductions, not real. Gansler said this. And I want to comment about that. I believe that alien abductions are real. I believe there's evidence that they do take place. Obviously, there are some people who make up stories about alien abductions. There are other people that exaggerate their experiences. But I do believe there are absolutely legitimate alien abductions that have taken place. And my personal opinion is that's one of the biggest secrets of the UFO cover-up, because they don't want the public to know that. They don't want people to know that there have indeed been people abducted from their homes, from their cars, from the outdoors by aliens, experimented on, and so forth. And I believe Gansler was telling a lie, and that's what you have to do with these core secrets. If somebody asked you about a core secret, you have to lie about it. And that's what I believe Gansler was doing, because I believe the evidence is overwhelming that abductions do take place. So to continue, EWD, what else? TW, Thomas Wilson, told to drop the matter, no more discussion about it. EWD, willing to talk to Hal Puthoff. Hal Puthoff is a well-known scientist. That's now associated with To the Stars Academy. He was also a member of NIDS. And Kit Green, that's Christopher Kit Green. He was the former director of the Weird Desk at the CIA, and he's had a number of fascinating experiences. And he really needs to be interviewed by reporters about what he experienced in his career, such as being sent alleged videos of alien autopsies. And although he thinks, you know, they could have been red herrings to try to entrap him somehow. Or
these are the Centilli clips, is it?
Well, he was sent a series. Christopher Kit Green was sent up to a dozen different videos, and not the, just the Centilli ones, up to a dozen different videos over a period of time, maybe over a decade. And some of them seem legitimate. Some of them came with actual documentation. But, you know, he doesn't know what they really represented. And there's some, if you go online, there's some interviews with him where he talks about it to a certain extent. But that's, you know, but also another interesting thing about his career is he was briefed into a CIA UFO program. And that's something else that people could interview him about. And I believe Kit Green is also someone who could probably vouch for the validity of this document, because I would guess that he has probably spoken with Eric Davis. So he could vouch for the validity of the Admiral Wilson document. So he's someone that it would be great to have mainstream reporters approach and talk to. But I think Hal Puthoff would probably even know more than Kit Green, because Hal Puthoff, he's been everywhere, just like that country song that goes, "I've been everywhere, man, cross the desert sand, man." It's a famous old country song that goes through my head sometimes, but it fits Hal Puthoff perfectly because he's been in this game for a very long time, and he has a huge knowledge base, and he is someone that I believe could absolutely verify the reality of this document. I personally believe he's holding other evidence about the UFO cover-up that could expose all of this. And I hope that reporters will interview him about crash recovery, specifically crash recoveries, because that's what's so important in exposing the UFO cover-up, because sightings in the sky, crop circles, cattle mutilations, they can all be debated. They can all be argued about. But if you have an actual craft that has crashed with bodies, that's irrefutable proof. That's smoking gun evidence no skeptic can argue about. And I believe all these different people with NIDS and in TTSA, if they would just reveal what they know, if they would buck the system and potentially, you know, go against their training of their entire career. You know, they're scared to step on the toes of these special access programs. Well, these special access programs are criminal, and they are rogue programs that are holding back critical information from our democratically elected leaders and 99% of our military leaders. And that is just putting our country at risk in many, many different ways. And so they need to buck the system, and they just need to share what they know, because that's the true patriotic thing to do. You know, it's not patriotic to allow for an abomination like the UFO cover-up to continue, to allow it to go on when you have information that could unravel it. And I believe people like Hal Puthoff and Kit Green and others in TTSA, both individually and collectively, they have the information to expose these programs once and for all. For goodness sakes, Eric Davis has stated in an interview that you can listen to online that, and remember, Eric Davis, through Hal Puthoff, who was a contractor for ATIP, Eric Davis did work for ATIP. And so Eric Davis outright stated through the course of their work, of ATIP's work, they located the four special access programs. I don't know if he said four, but whatever number it is, the special access programs working on reverse engineering, yet they were denied access. So they know these programs exist. Lou Elizondo knows these reverse engineering programs exist, but they will not speak about it. They will not even go there because they don't want to out a classified program. However, the fact this program is classified and the knowledge of it is being withheld from our democratically elected officials and 99% of our military, and most likely even the last several presidents, is an abomination that I cannot even begin to describe. And if they're true patriots, if people like Lou Elizondo, who has served so bravely in the military in the past, you know, he knows what patriotism is about. He knows what sacrifice is about, because he has witnessed it. He has witnessed soldiers, you know, go into battle and risk their lives for a greater good. And the greatest good that anybody could ever sacrifice their well-being for would be the exposure of the UFO cover-up. I'll tell you right now, exposing the UFO cover-up is a much more noble goal than any war in the Middle East for any reason. Exposing this cover-up will benefit our civilization in so many ways. It's unbelievable. And we'll get into that more later. But there's so many people in these organizations and so many people in this document that need to be interviewed. It's just overwhelming. So to continue, So I'm going to reread this one little part. EWD willing to talk to Hal Putoff and Kit Green, discussed who they are and RV, that's remote viewing, program history. TW, that means Thomas Wilson, not familiar with names, heard about RV, remote viewing programs in 1990. Maybe, maybe not for Hal with thinking about it. That's if he would be willing to talk with Hal. No response for Kit Green. Prefers never to talk to anyone else about this again. Risk exposure. Better to stop talking. Cut it off here. That's why Admiral Wilson to this day is not willing to talk about his experiences. EWD, keep for, well, I skipped one little part. TW, what will you, EWD, Eric Davis, do with this? Talking about the conversation they had. EWD, keep for private personal research, data collection to track down the story and ascertain signal to noise in media and from government sources. We'll keep mouth shut, ET, et cetera, et cetera. Told Wilson about Mary Elizabeth Elliott, TRW story, Ingo story, 1974 RVer woman who went to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base trying to make connections. So he promises Admiral Thomas Wilson that he's going to keep all this information, this document right here, for example, for his own private personal research. However, due to the fact we're reading it, we know that didn't happen. It got out. But this is wonderful that it got out because the UFO cover-up is still going, and we need strong evidence to expose it once and for all. And this is extremely strong evidence in this document. And it lists names, and it gives all sorts of leads. And so this document is so critical to bringing down the UFO cover-up once and for all. And to mention a few of these names, Mary Elizabeth Elliott is a big mystery. We don't know who she is. We don't know exactly what went on with her. She's obviously not related to these, at least we don't think so, his experiences with the special access programs. It's a separate story of hers, another incident of some kind. But what we do know is that she had a lawyer, Jeffrey W. Griffith, that's mentioned in this document. I'll continue. And also Ingo, when it says Ingo story, Ingo Swan was an extremely gifted remote viewer. And there's a lot of information about him online. You can look up. I don't know who the 1974 RVer woman who went to Wright-Patterson was. I've looked that up. I can't find that. Maybe somebody else would have more luck. So now to continue. TW, Thomas Wilson, feedback. Mary Elliott sounds like real deal based on her info and behavior with attorney Jeffrey W. Griffith. Probably will only come totally clean on her deathbed 30 years from now. Don't know about Ingo Axelrod or RVer woman at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Doesn't have info on their stories from sources. Ask for Corso material. Will send. EWD. Note. TW asked for a briefing book on my work. NASA Air Force Research Laboratory. Send other papers if I want to. Give an address in D.C. to mail, will retire to Midwest and close office in 2003. So that is the summary of the Admiral Thomas Wilson document, and further discussion will happen in a moment.
Okay, so after that amazing breakdown by Mr. X, which has just provided a really kind of comprehensive overview of the Admiral Wilson leaks for anyone who was already either familiar, you're hopefully now more informed, and if you have never heard of them before, hopefully this has been extremely interesting for you. So what we're going to do now is we're just going to jump into some questions and answers. So the first question that we're going to go with is, in your opinion, how important are the Admiral Wilson document leaks? Why do you think they need more attention by the public and, more importantly, really, by mainstream media?
Well, they the Admiral Thomas Wilson document is the most important piece of evidence the UFO community has received in decades, if not potentially ever. The document proves that a rogue, illicit cabal of unacknowledged special access programs do indeed hold crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft and have been reverse engineering them. Also, it lets us know that at least in the past, the senior review group of the Special Access Program Oversight Committee, I should say the leadership team of the senior review group, at least the chairman, the co-chairman, members of that senior review group were complicit in covering this up. And so to me, that is just terrifying. And this document is what could help expose them, could help expose this UFO cover-up that has been going on for so long.
Another question I'd like to ask you is, if you were in a room with members of To the Stars Academy and any of their affiliated advisors who were in turn also involved in some shape or form with the Admiral Wilson documents, and could provide key insights currently unknown, if you were sitting in a room with people like Hal Puthoff, Eric Davis, Luis Elizondo, Kit Green, etc., what would you say to them?
I would say, don't you realize that your unwillingness to share what you know about this document is helping the illegal rogue special access programs who are responsible for the atrocity that is the UFO cover-up, allowing them to continue keeping humanity ignorant over this issue? Their place in the universe, answers to questions that have plagued humanity for thousands of years, earth-saving technologies that manipulate the vacuum itself, these gatekeepers have decided they have the authority to sequester all of this from us as if they were gods themselves. Do you realize that the most patriotic thing you could do for your country is to expose these cabals that have hijacked control of this topic and make sure that it's returned to our democratically elected representatives? For God's sakes, what do you think the founders of this country and the authors of the Constitution would have to say? Do you think they'd support your decision to remain silent? Or do you think that your admittedly hard-earned, top-secret SCI clearances are more important than getting these truths out there? Many of you have been playing the game and abiding by the rules for decades in the hopes that they'd eventually let you into these programs and give you access. Do you realize that's not realistically going to happen? The only way for all of you to obtain the knowledge and positions that you truly deserve after your decades of research is to release the core secrets that will bring down these programs once and for all. There is no use denying it. You know a great deal more about these programs, their identities, their code names, the contractors involved, what they're working on, and even more. If you could just summing up half the courage of one of the doctors or nurses in this country that are caring for coronavirus patients, often without personal protective gear, knowing that they are taking the risk of getting sick or dying themselves, or even worse, carrying it back to their spouses and children at home, then you'd share what you know openly and start going on the offensive against these programs. Doing this wouldn't make you a traitor. You wouldn't be committing some unpardonable sin against your country. No, you'd be heroes, true heroes that would be remembered for generations because you took action, direct, bold action that no one else could, because no one else has nearly as much information on these programs as yourselves. We need you. We're depending upon you. Please don't let your country down. As Benjamin Franklin once said, those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. You may think the safe thing to do is continue avoiding all discussion of classified material and keep jumping through the hoops to avoid crossing or offending the special access programs working on reverse engineering or upsetting their overlords, such as whatever might remain of MJ-12 or the control groups. But none of us are safe. None of our families are safe. And even none of our children are safe until full disclosure about the UFO subject happens and these organizations are brought down. Until then, we have no true liberty. All 7.8 billion of us sharing this planet are wearing chains around ourselves, even if we can't see them.
I could not imagine a better answer to that question, and I can only hope that in some way, somehow, some of the members of To the Stars Academy and some of the people responsible for these documents in one way or another hear that statement, because that was profoundly important and absolutely on point. So thank you so much for giving that statement.
You're welcome.
So one thing that could help and is one of the main key focuses is obviously the chain of custody relating to these documents and how exactly they managed to get out into the public realm. So can you just kind of break down the chain of custody for us?
Okay. That's an important question. To start off, you know, from the beginning, Eric Davis composed this document right after his meeting with Admiral Wilson. We don't know if it was from a tape he recorded, if this is or just notes from memory. We just don't know that. But I tend to think that he had to have some kind of recording to get all this detail. But again, he may have a photographic memory, or he may have just a very, very good memory, and he could have ran out the car into his car and started scribbling down notes as soon as it was over with. That is possible. But at one time, Eric Davis, perhaps during the time that this meeting took place, was a member of NIDS, which was the National Institute for Discovery Science. That was Bob Bigelow's organization. This document, was transferred to Edgar Mitchell, who was a science advisor to NIDS, and that's documented. You can go on the Wayback Machine, find the old version of NIDS website, and you will see Edgar Mitchell's picture right there, and it lists him as a science advisor. I think he might even have been like chief science advisor. So he was in that organization. And so because he was a member of that, it gives a reason why he would have a copy of this document. And also because he was directly involved in the whole affair from the beginning, in the initial briefing of Admiral Wilson. So he would have had a reason for Eric Davis to give it to him. Or if it wasn't Eric Davis, I mean, if Eric Davis could have shared it with Puthoff, for example, and Puthoff could have been the one that gave Edgar Mitchell a copy. We don't exactly know, but it was obviously someone in the NIDS organization. So years later, when Edgar Mitchell died, it turned out his family had absolutely no interest in his UFO passion, and they were literally going to toss out his entire archive of UFO documents, literally just throw it all into a dumpster, which would have been a horrible tragedy. A friend of his, which remains unidentified, stepped in and asked the family if he could have the documents, and he legally acquired them. They were not stolen. They were not hacked. They were not taken without them knowing. They were legally acquired from the family because he had been a friend of Edgar Mitchell. And this individual who acquired these documents from Edgar Mitchell's home knew James Rigney. And I guess during discussion somehow, at some point he told James Rigney about these documents. And then James Rigney found a way to acquire the Admiral Wilson document from him. And so from there, he gave the Admiral Wilson document to Grant Cameron. And Grant Cameron was supposed to publish it broadly, but Grant Cameron because he was so freaked out about the significance of this document, because it's so hot, it's so important, it contains so much critical information and so many names, he didn't know what to do. Grant Cameron claimed that he was losing sleep over it at night. He would wake up in a sweat. And so he just held on to it. But Grant Cameron was also privately distributing it to certain individuals. And apparently one of these individuals, who could have been one of the so-called young guns of ufology, like some people like to call them, it could have been one of them. We don't know. Grant Cameron claims he has a suspicion of who it was, leaked one of these documents to Reddit. And it sat on Reddit for a period of time, completely unnoticed, until someone on Twitter apparently noticed it or was informed about it, and they posted a link, and then it just went viral. And I'm so glad it was leaked, and Grant Cameron was not the one that actually posted it, because Grant Cameron has described how he told his assistant originally to literally black out every single name in the document and to black out other bits of information as well. So it would have been a heavily redacted document if Grant Cameron would have had his way. But thankfully, someone else a little bit braver, a little bit bolder, a little bit more courageous. Not saying Grant Cameron is not courageous, because he's done great research. But in this case, someone a little bit bolder just posted it in completely unredacted format. And I think that is so critical, because that's what's the information in this document is what's going to help disclosure happen. If reporters can actually have the courage to use this and investigate and then report on it.
All right. So who do you believe are the most important players in the whole Admiral Wilson leak scenario that are not specified within the transcripts?
Well, I think that the identities of the members of the senior review group at the time when he was searching for these special access programs is very important. He does not name the members of the senior review group at the time. And I think he does not name them because he would not want to reveal classified information, because they would have most likely have been read into this program. The name would have been on the bigot list. So to reveal who they were could potentially be revealing names that were on the bigot list and therefore would have been a core secret, which he was not willing to share with Eric Davis. But we know, well, we think we know who was on the leadership team of the senior review group. There are other people that would have served in the senior review group, but this would have been the leadership team. The first name is Noel Longmire Jr. Noel Longmire Jr. At the time, he was serving as both the deputy undersecretary of defense and the undersecretary of defense. And traditionally, during that time period, it was the undersecretary of defense that would have been the chairman of the senior review group. Because he was only the acting undersecretary of defense, we do not know if he was the chairman of the senior review group or if he was the individual that threatened Admiral Wilson. So there's a possibility he was not that individual. However, I still think that reporters that cover this story should conduct additional interviews with him. Like I said previously, one reporter, Billy Cox, interviewed him. He denied knowledge, but he denied knowledge of the affair, but I think it would be great if some other reporters could ask him some questions. Also, we know that Major General William F. Moore would have been the co-chairman of the senior review group, because he was the director of special programs, and that name is not mentioned in the document. Major General William F. Moore. Other names were mentioned. The name of the director of special programs before him and the name of the director of special programs after him. So his predecessor and successor were both named in the document. But the actual name of the director of special programs that would have been in that position at the time was not named. And I believe that was intentional on the part of Admiral Wilson, that he didn't want to give that name. But that name, and this is an absolute fact, that he was the director of special programs, which would have made him the co-chairman of the senior review group, was General William F. Moore. And he's someone else that I think reporters, mainstream reporters, should try to interview. Also, Richard F. Williams, also known in some documents or referred to in some documents as just Mr. Dick Williams. So that's Richard F. Williams or Mr. Dick Williams, would have been the executive secretary of the senior review group, because he would have been serving. He would have had a position on the Special Access Project Coordination Office. And so he's someone else that should be interviewed, because he served for a very long time in the Department of Defense. And you can find his name in a lot of documents online that are declassified about the senior review group. And so you can actually, he's someone who, all these three people I just named are alive. Noel Longmire Jr., Major General William F. Moore, Richard F. Williams, they are all alive. So if there's mainstream journalists who want to find out what really happened, these are prime people to interview. However, you know, other important players would be the individuals that helped Admiral Wilson find these special access programs that were doing reverse engineering work. We know that was William Perry. He's very old. He was the Secretary of Defense at the time. He's very old, but he's still alive. He could be interviewed. Also, we know, I believe that the predecessor that was the director of special programs before this saga, he is still alive. I believe that's Michael Kostinick, I believe, is the name in the document. So there's multiple names in the document. You can look through it, people who are still alive that could be contacted. And, of course, other important players who we don't know yet would be those gatekeepers, the project manager, the security director, and the corporate attorney who Admiral Wilson interacted with. We don't know their identities yet, and they would be someone that should be interviewed.
So there's been some public comment by some of the members of, well, mainly TTSA. So we've got Eric Davis, who kind of by proxy, I don't know his official role in TTSA, but I'm assuming kind of by proxy and association, he's involved with To the Stars Academy. And then obviously Hal Puthoff, and you mentioned even Jim Semivan. So I wanted to get your opinion on the kind of responses we've received publicly from TTA staffers who have been involved with or are mentioned in the leaked documents in some way.
Well, what's important to note in response to your question about the Admiral Wilson document and the people who have made comments is that no one in To the Stars Academy and no one who used to be in NIDS has denied the reality or authenticity of this document. No one has. Even when they were pressed to do so, they did not deny it. Instead, people like Puthoff, Eric Davis, Kit Green have issued non-denials, very oddly worded, strained, contrived non-denials, written almost to the point like they are confirmations. And they just say they cannot comment because the document could contain classified information or references to special access programs. They give excuses and non-denial, but they do not deny it. Also importantly, Eric Davis himself does not deny the reality of this document. And like I mentioned previously, he has a very bold, direct, no-nonsense personality. And if he did not meet with Admiral Wilson, and this meeting never happened, he would be the first one to jump up and say, hey, that document is a fraud. It is fake. It is false. And I want to find out who made it up. He'd be the first one to say that, but he hasn't. And I really firmly believe that his silence is a confirmation that this meeting did indeed take place. Also, we know the story of Jim Simivan, who Jim Simivan had a conversation with Melinda Leslie about this document. And Melinda Leslie is a abduction in my lab researcher. A my lab is a military abduction where the military will abduct people to perform experiments and so forth on them. And Melinda Leslie is both an alien abductee and a my lab victim. And she has reported that in a conversation with this individual that she pressed him for, I think, 20 minutes to try to deny the reality of the Admiral Wilson document. But Jim Simivan would not deny it. He just would not. He wouldn't confirm it and he wouldn't deny it. He just kept this weird position. And that's how they are. They're trying to keep this strange neutrality about this without actually confirming it, which I think is really a tragedy because they need to confirm it. They need to use this because this is the strongest evidence we have for the reality of crash recoveries and the UFO cover-up. I mean, we have other evidence. There's much, you know, there's all kinds of evidence that crash recoveries have happened, but this is very strong, direct evidence, and they need to latch onto that because go ahead.
No, go on.
I was just going to say that it doesn't seem like they're going to be getting any more UFO videos at this point. And it doesn't seem like they have any other smoking gun evidence of the UFO cover-up. And so they need to utilize the Admiral Thomas Wilson document, and they need to just buck the system. They need, if this violates their NDAs, they need to just virtually shred their DNA, their NDAs. They need to shred their security oaths and just use this document, spread this document. This document needs to be the focus. It needs to be the centerpiece of the next season of Unidentified. And this, they need to push this to try to get the truth to come out about crash recoveries. If they don't, you know, to me, it's just really, really sad because it means it tells me that these patriots, these longtime researchers, even individuals like Tom DeLong, who has had a passion about this since childhood, and others that have actually been in military service, like Lou Elizondo, they're willing to let, you know, rules and regulations designed to protect these rogue special access programs basically bring a halt to UFO disclosure. And that is just a shame to me. That is a tragedy because UFO disclosure is critical for the future of humanity. And if they are not going to push this document, the best evidence they have, in my opinion, they might as well close down to the STARS Academy. They should just fold. They should just go about their lives. They should just enjoy their retirement, enjoy time with their grandchildren, and just enjoy life rather than continue to try to push UFO disclosure, but in a sort of gimped manner with two arms tied behind their back, you know, unable to use their best evidence. To me, that's just, I just cannot describe how ridiculous the situation is that they will not openly talk about this document.
Well, I think we're both in agreement that our hope for this discussion is that if there's any kind of mainstream researchers or journalists that are looking to, you know, pursue this story, that it can serve as a kind of comprehensive breakdown of why it's so important and, you know, what needs to be done. And that's kind of my question as well. And I suppose in essence, not just for journalists, but for anyone who's interested in this story and these leaks, what in your opinion needs to be done in order to fully take advantage of these documents now that they're out?
Well, if there's mainstream journalists paying attention to this and investigating this, they need to start questioning people. They need to start interviewing people. There's many, many people that can be interviewed. There's many names in this document. There's other names we revealed, three people that are still alive that were members of the senior review group, except we're not 100% sure about Longmire Jr. Though L. Longmire Jr., I'm not 100% sure about him, but there's potentially three people that could be interviewed. And there's other people, too, because we know previous members of the senior review group. Also, I want to suggest that any mainstream reporters who are listening to this realize that there have been, even in just the last couple of decades, at least 13 different directors of special programs for ALSTAT. There's been 13 of them. And I can read these names out really quickly if you want me to, because I think all of these individuals should be contacted and should be asked about these UFO programs.
I think you should go ahead.
Okay. And all this information is freely available online. It's not classified. It's on ordinary websites if you do the digging to find it. These are just 13 directors. There's a little gap in the middle that I couldn't find who was the director of special programs for a gap, but this starts in 1992. So these are 13 different directors of special programs. And again, I want to stress it's the director of special programs that's at the nexus between the DOD and the black world. All the program managers of all the special access programs have to report to him. And then he reports it to the senior review group. And then the senior review group reports, they choose what to report to their overall special access program oversight committee. So it's this position, which is so critical. And I do, and he's going to be mentioned in here, but again, General William McCaslin, Tom DeLonge's original insider that he said was such an important man. He was a director for special programs and he needs to be interviewed. So I'll start with this list. Number one, and there was director of special programs before this, but I just went this far back. Number one, Brigadier General Ralph H. Graham. Again, Brigadier General Ralph H. Graham, 1992 to 1993. Number two, Major General Michael C. Kostinick, which we've already talked about. Major General Michael C. Kostinick, June 1994 to September 1995. Number three, this was the Director of Special Programs that would have been on the Senior Review Group during Admiral Thomas Wilson's search for the Special Access Programs. So it's Major General, number three, Major General William F. Moore. Major General William F. Moore. Major General William F. Moore, December 1995 through September 1998. Number four, Major General Marshall Ward, September 1998 through September 2001. At least until that date. Number five, Major General Paul G. Schaefer. Major General Paul G. Schaefer, February 2006 through July 2008. Number six, Lieutenant General C.D. Moore. Lieutenant General C.D. Moore, July 2008 through June 2009. Number seven, Major General William Neil McCaslin. Again, Tom DeLonge's original insider, the ever so important general that he talked about on Coast to Coast AM and other radio shows that told him all of the UFO stuff was true, that Roswell happened and so forth. This is Major General William Neil McCaslin, June 2009 through May 2011. Number eight, Major General Thomas J. Macello, May 2011 through 2013. Major General Thomas J. Macello, 2011 through 2013. Number nine, Brigadier General Richard S. Stapp, July 2013 through November 2014. Number 10, Brigadier General David B. Bean. That's B-E-E-N. Brigadier General David B. Bean. That's his last name is B-E-E-N. That's March 25th through August 2016. Number 11, Major General John P. Horner. Major General John P. Horner, July 2016 through May 2018. Number 12, Major General Don Dunlop, 2018 through May 2019. Number 13, Air Force Colonel Bruce Monroe. He was Dunlop's replacement. So Air Force Colonel Bruce Monroe, and he started in May 2019. So that's the last one I have. And I believe reporters, mainstream reporters that are investigating this, they should try to interview as many of these as possible. They all sit at this gateway between the black world and the DOD oversight mechanisms of these special access programs. So these are very important people who would need to be interviewed. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there people that you think need to be, you know, in congressional hearings in relation to this?
Oh, yeah, there's many people that need to be called into congressional hearings. I think that's the only way to really get the truth out is congressional hearings, because you have to realize the level of secrecy on this topic has went to an absurd level, an insane level. It's secrets stacked upon secrecy, stacked upon secrecy, and they're breaking the rules. They are hiding out behind other programs. All of this has been buried within private corporations, which are inaccessible through Freedom of Information Act requests. You can't send a FOIA request to Lockheed. You cannot. It just doesn't work. It's not applicable to a private corporation. And all of this is just buried. The only way to get the truth out is if Congress has open congressional hearings, and this can't be done behind closed doors. You cannot end UFO secrecy and bring it into the cover-up if you make the congressional hearings secret. Whatever former classified programs or currently classified UFO programs get revealed, they just have to be revealed openly and publicly. It has to be. If that doesn't happen, then the congressional hearings are useless. So we need open, transparent congressional hearings, nothing classified, no closed doors sessions, not a single one. Every session has to be completely open. And we need many, many different people to be called to testify. Obviously, we need Admiral Thomas Wilson to testify, to tell his story. We need all the individuals who had been in the senior review group at the time. We need them to testify. We mentioned their names already. We also need other members of the leadership in the DOD at the time, including everyone up to William Cohen, which was the Secretary of Defense, William Cohen. All of them need to testify. All the former director of special programs that I just listed, including General William McCaslin, need to testify in congressional hearings. What a lot of people don't realize is the Department of Energy. They have a senior review group of their own because they have special access programs. And in addition to a special access program oversight committee, they also have a senior review group, sort of like the DOD. And the leadership of the Department of Energy's senior review group needs to be summoned to testify, because there's a lot of evidence that some UFO programs, reverse engineering programs, maybe even the Flux Liner, we don't know, maybe the TR-3B, we don't know, could have been hiding behind the Atomic Energy Act of 1954, because any technology that has to do with atomic energy production falls under that act, the Atomic Energy Act of 1954, and anything that falls under that act is controlled by the Department of Energy. And also another little thing I was going to mention here is that if these UFOs that they have acquired, if they believe, they don't even have to know it, if they just believe that they utilize nuclear power in any way, like if they have a self-organizing plasma in their core, a macro EVO, exotic vacuum object, for example, then they might be hiding it behind an even more restrictive Department of Energy classification. And this classification is called a critical nuclear weapon design information. That's CNWDI, critical nuclear weapon design information classification. So there could be these programs buried in the Department of Energy, managed by private corporations. That would be leeching funds off the Department of Energy. So whoever is in charge of their senior review group, and they need to be called to testify as well. Also, I believe all of the original insiders of Tom DeLonge need to be called to testify, including, for example, William McCaslin, of course, but also Robert F. Weiss of Lockheed, that Tom DeLonge met at Area 51 and talked about the UFO topic with. He needs to be summoned. Also, there's other insiders that he had originally. I believe one was General Michael Carey. He could be, I believe he worked for NORAD, you know, and they track every object in the sky and every object in orbit. So he might have critical knowledge that could help unravel this. You know, and also there's people in TTSA have been researching this topic for decades, and they have probably signed NDAs and non-disclosure agreements, and have heard all sorts of information from different parties that they promised to keep, you know, confidential, because that's a big problem in the UFO community right now. It's a gigantic problem, because somebody wants to say something to you, but before they'll do it, they have to say, don't tell this to anybody. Keep it to yourself. You have to promise me you'll keep this confidential. And then you're bound by that promise, and you can't repeat the information to anyone. So it's a big problem. But individuals like Dr. Hal Puthoff, Christopher Kit Green, in TTSA, they need to be like Christopher Kit Green isn't actually in TTSA, but he's part of their larger network. And he was also a member of, I believe he was a member of NIDS at one point, or at least closely affiliated with them. They need to be called to testify. And of course, Eric Davis himself needs to be called to testify, because not only did Eric Davis have this amazing meeting with Admiral Wilson, but it seems like in one of his interviews, he very, very strongly at least alludes to the fact that he was partially read in to a special access program. He talks about meeting the vice president of a legacy aerospace corporation that told him, yeah, I worked in the reverse engineering program, but I don't anymore. So he has all kinds of inside information that he needs to share to Congress. I would also say that Dr. Stephen Greer needs to be summoned to Congress to speak, because he claims to have loads of information he has never shared as an insurance policy. So if anything ever happened to him, all this information he's never released would be published. But that information needs to be released immediately in a congressional hearing for everyone to know. And obviously, when all these people are speaking, this would be a long process. It wouldn't be a one-day affair. This would be weeks. This would be weeks of televised congressional hearings, and other names would come up. And then those individuals would have to be summoned to testify. And anybody that wouldn't testify, Congress needs to send authorities out to bring them to testify if they won't do so voluntarily, or if they are too old, if they are in a nursing home, if they are in a care facility, then they need to send congressional representatives to get testimony from them remotely, or use a secure streaming service to stream the testimony straight to the open congressional hearings. You know, all of this has to be open and it has to be transparent, because the whole purpose of this is bringing light to a very obscure, dark, scary subject. And I say scary not because of the ETs being scary necessarily, not because there's ETs visiting Earth or that UFOs have crashed, but because private corporations and rogue special access programs have usurped the authority of our democratically elected representatives. That's what's terrifying. I think there's more than enough information out there now for any mainstream reporter who wants to latch on to this story to give them a direction to go. And there's many people they can interview. There's many sources for information. You know, if anybody listening to this in the mainstream media wants to talk to me, you know, they can always send you an email or contact you and you can forward me the correspondence. Because I think this is a story that needs to be told, because the future of human civilization depends upon this.
Well, we've discussed this a lot, but why do you personally think UFO disclosure is so important? And also, why do you think it's worth taking it to the level of things like congressional hearings when it comes to these types of document leaks as well?
Well, obviously, the first obvious thing that comes to mind is that we're such a warfaring species, we're destroying ourselves. You know, we work against each other. We don't work for the common good on this planet. Different countries are either in actual physical combat against each other, or they play spy games against each other, or they lie to each other about issues like coronavirus, and they hold information back from each other. But what we really need is for UFO disclosure to happen, because it creates a much bigger issue that transcends all the petty nonsense that's causing so much strife and discord on this planet. And it would bring humanity together, because there would be a more important issue to deal with. Also, I think it's so much more important because it would tell us about our place in the universe. There's so much to learn from these ETs. And since we've had craft and we've had bodies and perhaps even a live alien, I'm sure the special access programs have been able to acquire a ton of information about these beings and where they come from. And I don't doubt for a moment that they have established open communications, because if there are ETs flying in our skies and physical craft and physical vehicles, and if these special access programs, like we know they've had billions of dollars in funding, they would have figured out a way to communicate with them. And so establishing communication with these beings could tell us so much about the universe we live in. It could alert the world that we live in a universe full of life, and that we have so much more in common with each other on this planet than we have differences. And it could help potentially bring humanity together, so there's less racism, there's less strife among all of us. When we are all human, we all have the basic needs and desires. We need to cut out some of the petty bickering and fighting amongst each other and work for the common good of our species. Also, the technological discoveries is enormous, because these craft literally have a mastery of gravity, inertia, mass. They can manipulate the vacuum or the ether or the zero point energy field, the electron positron sea, whatever you want to term this universal medium. They know how to engineer it. They know how to manipulate it. And with that technology, we could produce unlimited clean energy. We could have, you know, transportation would become ultra fast and ultra cheap. Literally, the dream of flying cars would become a reality, but it wouldn't just be flying cars that could travel across town or across state or to another country. There could be flying cars that could go to Mars and back, literally. With this technology, anything becomes possible. Humanity could become, well, first of all, humanity would have a tool to potentially survive our technological adolescence as a species, and we could use this to become a spacefaring species and start expanding humanity beyond this one planet. So we could start building bases and habitats on Mars and the asteroid belt and the moons and the outer solar system and maybe even beyond. And I think why it's worth having congressional hearings is because of the math. Number one, the fact the UFO cover-up actually ended up going so badly. Number one, I don't believe the UFO cover-up was legitimate to begin with. However, from a certain point of view, you could kind of understand that right when Roswell and these original crashes happened, they really didn't know what was going on. So from a certain limited point of view, you might could understand a little bit of secrecy to begin with. But it turned into a monster. And it ended up being transferred for decades and decades, for a whole human lifespan. This cover-up has been going on for nearly 80 years. And it was transferred to special access programs and being managed by these corporate entities so that it would be hidden from not only the public, from not only the people of this country, but also of democratically elected representatives and our leaders in the military and even presidents. It was hidden away from humanity, and it has to be revealed. And I think it's the most important issue facing humanity right now, and it deserves congressional hearings, and it deserves revolutionary congressional hearings. And I say revolutionary due to the fact that for these congressional hearings to have a positive effect, we have to throw caution to the wind. They can't censor what these people are saying in public in these congressional hearings, regardless of the topic, regardless whatever the truth is, regardless how many alien species are visiting Earth, regardless how many crashed vehicles they recovered, regardless what the ETs had to tell us about the universe, the public has a right to know. So these congressional hearings have to be completely open and transparent.
You have a pretty extensive background research knowledge in regards to things of like an exotic physics concepts regarding ET craft, potential energy systems for UFOs. And I'd like to gauge your opinion and let you give your opinion to the listeners on how you think some UFOs work in regards to their propulsion systems.
Well, there have been many different types of UFOs sighted over the history of humanity and in modern times. And there's probably many different types of propulsion systems, you know, utilizing different variations. But I think fundamentally they all work by manipulating the vacuum, by manipulating what I referred to previously as the zero point energy field. Basically, in the past, Maxwell, in his original equations, he utilized what was called the scalar and vector potentials. And basically, they described the medium throughout all of space, even within our bodies, even between the atoms, and even within the atoms, between the subatomic particles, there is this medium that exists everywhere. And he termed it the scalar and vector potentials. The scalar potential could be briefly described as, imagine that you are under the surface of a river and you feel the water pressure equally all around you, a uniform pressure pushing against you. That could be considered the scalar potential. The vector potential would be considered the movement of the water, the flow of the water, the current of the water down the river. That would be the vector potential. And by manipulating these potentials, you can control mass, you can control inertia, you can control gravity, and I believe that you can control the flow rate of time. I don't want to get into this detail and too in depth, but I have some skepticism about while time travel going back and forth to the future and the past and creating paradoxes. You know, that seems to present some problems there. But if you look at the theories out there, it makes perfect sense that the flow of time could be controlled, either accelerating it in a certain region or slowing it down in a certain region. And to manipulate the ether and the vector and scalar potentials, my personal opinion after the research I've done is that a lot of these UFOs utilize self-organizing plasmas. And another term for a self-organizing plasma could be an EVO, which stands for exotic vacuum object. Kenneth Radford Shoulders investigated EVOs for several years in a partnership with Harold Puthoff and Bell Church. And eventually their partnership kind of faded out and they went their own ways. But he did some amazing research, and these EVOs have very exotic properties. And the one property we'll talk about right now is that they seem to, in these, what an EVO is, it's a self-organizing plasma of electrons and ions, and they can be either spherical or toroidal, and they seem to nullify a huge portion of their mass and inertia. So it's like they're creating a warp bubble around them. And I believe that is a bubble of vector potential around them. And so they are manipulating the vacuum, and he was able to accelerate these tiny, tiny EVOs that's, you know, potentially only a few microns in size to a small fraction of the speed of light for very, very little energy input. Literally, it was as if their mass was only a thousandth or less of what it should be. And I believe UFOs are utilizing the same principle. They have an internal self-organizing plasma that creates a bubble of vector potential around them, which could be considered roughly, I'm sure there's differences because Star Trek is fictional, but the basic concept of producing a field around yourself that allows for faster than light propulsion is indeed a real concept in my opinion. And they utilize that. Now, I believe that some UFOs most likely utilize really advanced concepts, some of them. They might utilize all these advanced metamaterials we hear about with nano-layered, you know, all this bismuth, magnesium, nano-layered stuff. That could very well be possible. But what I believe the real secret is, I believe what the fundamental truth is, that the powers that be in these special access programs and what Lockheed doesn't want us to know, is that it does not require metamaterials to produce anti-gravity craft, to produce a warp field, to produce these godlike vehicles that could take us around the solar system in hours. Instead, it only requires the production of a self-organizing plasma, which on the surface would have what's called a double layer, which is one side of the double layer would have positive ions, and the other side of the double layer would have electrons. But these electrons would be not ordinary electrons, but they would be in the form of Cooper pairs, and they would be exchanging energy with each other, and their waveforms would be overlapping. So they would no longer be completely individual electrons, but they would be what's called a Bose-Einstein condensate, because their waveforms, what they are, their fundamental structure would be overlapping with each other. And I believe when in a self-organizing plasma, this structure is formed, it can gain more traction with the vector potential and scalar potentials or the ether. So when it moves, so let's say you have it spinning or you have it flowing, this double layer can actually produce a way stronger vector potential or flow of ether than ordinary electrons that were not in a superconducting state. And I believe it's a superconducting quantum membrane that forms on the self-organizing plasma on the exterior at this double layer, which is critical for the anti-gravity effect. For example, there's information around that leads to the possibility that the Fluxliner ARV was actually using mercury isotope 199 because we know that Mercury, for many reasons, would be a likely candidate to produce a very well-organized macro-scale exotic vacuum object or self-organizing plasma. Mercury isotope 199, when it's doubly ionized, that means two electrons are removed from its outer shell. It obtains a pseudo-noble gas configuration. And we know noble gases, which are gases like argon, xenon, krypton, and so forth, work well in producing these self-organizing plasmas. And so mercury, especially because, not only because it would have a pseudo-noble gas configuration, but because it has such a low vaporization temperature, it can become a gas so easily at low temperature. It would be perfect to produce one of these self-organizing plasmas in the core of one of these systems. And I think the big secret, like I said before, is that Lockheed, probably with the help of other contractors, not totally in isolation, but with the help of other contractors, built anti-gravity craft long ago. I believe probably in the late 50s or early 60s, they built these anti-gravity vehicles, and they probably built many different variations of them. We know Tom DeLonge was specifically told by his insiders that, yes, we cracked gravity a long time ago. We reverse engineered these UFOs. We figured it out, and we've been building stuff with the technology. It's not just theory. It's not just equations. We actually built anti-gravity vehicles with the technology. He was told that. He said so on Coast to Coast AM and other programs. One little bit of information I want to share, if I can pull it up real quickly. Basically, Gordon Neville was an individual that was in a loose affiliation with Harold Puthoff and Mark McCandless and others investigating the Fluxliner ARV, trying to get at the reality of it, whether it was real or not. And Gordon Neville claimed, we have no proof of this, but Gordon Neville, in a book that's available online, he claimed that he actually tape recorded Richard Charles D'Amato, also known as Dick D'Amato, who worked for Senator Byrd. And this individual is also mentioned in Jacques Vallée's Forbidden Science series. I believe he's mentioned in book 3 and 4, but I know 4, but I think 3 as well. He's mentioned in this. But Gordon Neville claims that he recorded a conversation with him. And remember, this guy was tasked. Richard D'Amato was tasked to get to the bottom of the UFO question. He was told to investigate if we really did have this stuff, reverse engineered stuff. And he told Gordon Neville that allegedly, according to Gordon Neville, you know, we don't know this for a fact, but this is what Gordon Neville, who has died, so we can't question him, we can't ask him for this recording. But Richard D'Amato stated that the United States government paid $75 billion from 1950 to 1972 replicating a UFO. $75 billion from 1950 to 1972. And that's an amazing statement. And I believe there's, and I believe that's true. That's just my personal opinion. And
do you think, do you want to continue on?
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, do you think that, you know, humanity can actually develop these technologies, these systems, either, you know, just for energy or for propulsion and eventual aerospace, without the need for special access programs releasing all the information they have and have had for so long on these subjects? Can we do it without them?
Well, I believe since the taxpayers and the government paid for these technologies to be developed, that the public, the civilian sector, the white world, so to speak, has a right to them. We shouldn't have to pay twice to develop these technologies, which is really a shame that with a lot of these technologies invented in the black world, you know, the public has to pay once to have them invented in the black world, and then we have to pay for it again to be invented in the white world. And I think that's just horrible. But I think we would have a huge benefit if congressional hearings took place and these technologies were dragged out of these corporations, even regardless what amount of force had to be used. I believe the public has a right to these technologies, which were developed with taxpayer dollars, with government spending. We have a right to them because it would give us such a head start. It would give us such a boost. However, there are companies right now working with self-organizing plasmas and realizing their potential. One of these companies is called the Sapphire Project. And if you go online or go to YouTube or Google, you can type in the Sapphire Project, and there's many videos about them. They have a website. The most up-to-date website is actually Aureon Energy, A-U-R-E-O-N, Energy. You can Google that and find their newest website. And basically, they have a reactor. They're based in Canada, and they have a laboratory, a very, very sophisticated, well-equipped laboratory. And they have this reactor the size of a small car, and they have two large copper discs acting as cathodes, and they have a center spherical anode. And basically, when they run current through it at a sufficient voltage, they create a self-organizing plasma around the anode that wraps itself around the anode. And when they adjust the current to the specific level where these, first of all, these big, beautiful double layers, this beautiful plasma-like structure that's like a Russian nesting doll with plasma layers within plasma layers forms. But when they push the current even higher, that's what controls it. This next stage, when they push the current even higher, the double layers collapse, and you have this brilliant, extremely bright, dense layer very, very close to the surface of the anode. And there's an extreme voltage drop there. So there's a powerful electric field. And when that happens, not only does tremendous excess heat, not only is tremendous excess heat produced, but also transmutations take place. After the experiment, they can remove the anode and look at the surface with their equipment, and they can measure new elements. They can detect new elements on the surface that were not there before. And even in real time, they have the equipment to see elements being produced in the atmosphere of the reactor as well. So they are producing clean and safe nuclear power. And there may even be, they're not saying this, it's nuclear. They're not saying it's zero-point energy field. They try to be neutral. They try not to be bound by any one theory in particular, because they're trying to take a pragmatic approach and just figure out how it works, get the technology developed to produce a clean energy source, and then let physicists figure out the details, the nitty-gritty physics at the atomic level. Let them spend the next 100 years figuring out if they want to figure it out. They're just determined right now to get it on the market. And so they have this beautiful double layer, and it's glowing, and they have actually been able to melt the anode. In one case, the anode was a tungsten alloy, and it literally just melted. And so they can produce a large number of different anomalies in their reactor. So I'm hopeful, because the Sapphire Project and a couple others like them, that at least for energy production, there's progress being made. But at the same time, we shouldn't have to reinvent this, because I believe firmly that Lockheed and other legacy aerospace corporations have had their own versions of this self-organizing plasma technology that could provide unlimited clean energy and extremely fast non-Newtonian propulsion. They've had this technology for decades and decades, and they have a duty to release it to the world. And so I'm just against any idea of the public being forced to reinvent this when potentially $75 billion of taxpayer money was already spent to develop it years ago.
Well, I hope people understand the importance of this discussion. We've now been going for 3 hours, just coming up on 3 hours and 20 minutes, and we've covered from start to finish literally pretty much every aspect that I think we could possibly cover on the Admiral Wilson documents. And, you know, I think our hope is that if anyone is listening that has the ability to bring this out into a wider audience through mainstream media, that they actually do use this as some form of reference. And obviously, as Mr. X said before, if there is anyone that wants to get a hold of us, you might, my email is in the description, which is projectunitycontact@gmail.com. So if anyone does want to get hold of us for further contact, for me to pass you on to Mr. X, then I'm sure you'd be happy for me to do that, wouldn't you?
I would be happy to. I would be happy for you to do that. And I just want to also apologize for my throat. I have allergies. I have drainage. And I know my voice has been shaky. My voice has been cracking. And so I appreciate your tolerance of me.
Well, you've been talking for 3 hours and 20 minutes pretty much straight, and I've just been sitting here like everyone else and listening in with a lot of interest. So I think it's about time you took a break and rested your voice now. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on before we kind of wrap this up?
I just want to encourage one last time, any mainstream reporters that are listening, please pursue this. Pursue this story with vigor. Pursue it with everything you have, because this is the most important story in the history of mankind, except only for the birth of Jesus Christ himself. That's the significance of this story. And whoever cracks this story, the first reporters to report on it are going to go down in history. They will be famous. They will have students reading about them for generations to come. So please push this story. Do the investigative work. Do your digging. Contact all of these individuals that we've listed. Contact other individuals. Talk to Harold Puthoff. Talk to Eric Davis. Talk to all these people. They have the information to crack this whole thing wide open if they just choose to do so. They know where these special access programs are. They know how to find them, because ATIP was denied access to them. They have the information. Don't let them fool you. Push for the truth and push for congressional hearings so the world can finally start progressing towards a more civilized, rational, space-faring civilization.
You heard the man, everybody. And please do share this with as many people as you can. Get the word out. This is an extremely important conversation about an extremely important topic. And it does need to be put in front of a wider audience. So with that, I just want to say thank you again to Mr. X for all of the effort of talking for so long. Go and have a drink now, rest up, and thank you for doing this.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.